Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Say, Evelyn, can I ask you a question? You got a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Which team do you play for?
Well, I'm a peach.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a 2-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig and that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No. No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
What's the matter, Jimmy?
What? She's crying, sir.
I didn't mean to do that.
Perhaps you chastise her too vehemently. Good rule of thumb. Treat each of these girls as you would treat your mother.
Anyone ever tell you look like a penis with a little hat on?
You're out of here!
Oh, no,
right
no, no,
now,
no,
Jimmy, I heard
you
that!
Misunderstood.
Ten seconds,
you misunderstood
Jimmy.
Me!
No, I didn't.
You can't throw me out for
seconds,
that!
Jimmy.
No, you got a strike!
Right
now!
Fantastic. And hello to you. It is 17 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of August of the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy, a series of amusements unparalleled in all of human history. How lucky you are. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to join us today, 503-505-6964. Here's the thing about A League of Their Own. If you watch that now, I know I sound corny when I say this, just as good as the day it came out. It's fantastic. And really one of the few movies featuring Madonna that isn't just like a huge festering pile of bad.
Was that opening aimed at me?
Oh, wasn't that aimed at me? Yes, it was aimed at you. Yes, I'm sending you secret private messages only you can hear, Don.
Did you pick that specifically to just tell me that, you know,
that there's no crying in baseball?
Yes.
No, but if you'd like to take it personally, feel free to go ahead and do so. In fact, if you're going to take it personally, it seems like I probably can't stop you. So, let's find out right now. Let's just establish here at the beginning of the program. Is Don Taylor going to be taking the opening of the show personally?
I'm saying I shared with you earlier, I was feeling a little emo.
Yes.
And then what do you do for the opening? It's that.
Yes, because my clone, because I, you know, am here in front of you the entire time, and you can see exactly what we're doing. And in fact, I'm busy engaging in witty banter with you during Legion of News. So what I did is I contrived to have a secret version of me, not unlike a recent film starring Christian Bale. I had a secret version of me off in another room. Actually, finding, downloading, editing, and then bleeping out the profanity from the League of Their News, the League of Their Own opening, and then coming in here and sticking it on the computer while I distracted you with a bumblebee.
You have so many things, though, already there. I mean, come on, you have, like, you know, the opening to Heart to Heart. Well,
that's true, but that's hard.
That's
hard to heart, though. This is a league of their own. You have to go looking for that.
I was going to do this other opening, but I'm going to send Don a message. I'm going to use this one.
No, in fact, here's the thing about that. Actually, well, I've talked about this when we first started this version of the show. I mean, there was a good couple of. It was a good maybe a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that. Where some of the watches, like you would say, like now penis watch, clown watch, Obama watch, and I would just say like, let me see if I have that. Because it was a bunch of my archival stuff. It just, for some reason, it's hard to believe this. I know, but for some reason, at the end of the KUFO gig, I was just feeling a little dispirited about radio and thinking that I might not return.
Huh.
Thinking that I might opt to go sell seashells by the seashore instead. So, unlike previous gigs, like at Entercom, for example, where the writing was on the wall, but also I figured, you know, I got to get a job somewhere else. Maybe I should pack up all of my irreplaceable bits and belongings and just stick them on a drive somewhere. Like at Entercom, when they fired me at Entercom, doesn't matter. You know what I took off my desk? Like a pen. Like, I'm taking this pen and this paddle game and this ashtray, and that's it. And you all can suck one. And then I just left. Because, you know, I figured I would get another gig at some point, but I had all my crap already at home. At KUFO, let's have no illusions about this. At KUFO, everybody knew the hammer was coming down. I told the story about how Court and I, apparently on the same night but at separate times during the evening, he and I were both in the office packing up all of our stuff earlier that week because we both figured that we were going to get blown out. We both figured we were going to get whacked. And I'm like, you know what? F this. I'm not going to be the guy schlepping a big box of stuff home. I'm going to take everything up and do the Tim Riley. Just take it all home in a shoulder bag. So I packed it, but that's all like physical stuff, like my skull. You know, there's no bastard. There's no dick who gets himself photographed staring dreamily out a window is going to get my skull. So that's going home with me. So I went home and I put all my stuff in my bag, took it all home. But all of my, the watches, a lot of our worst songs ever. A lot of our board set, like my soundboard sound effects, that stuff. I had to create all of the stuff from scratch or go find it in my archives, which are like deep in my basement in like a big ass filing cabinet that's behind a bunch of other crap at home. Also, though, in that collection of things are all my opening speeches. So now I have very, very few of those. Now, wow. It's not like I'm not saying that I'm finding a brand new one for every day or that I'm finding stuff I've never used before. But often I have to go search stuff up. So I don't really have, it's not like I have hundreds of those just sitting around. I think I'm like 3 or 4 ahead at any given moment. So like right now, I gotta get them done through like Thursday. So if you'd like to request one, you know, if you want to request a movie sequence or speech or whatever for a show open, you love Rick Emerson. No, he'll hook you up, baby. All right.
That's nice.
Well, in any event, if you would like to engage with us telephonically, it's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. 6964. That is the telephone number for this, the Rick Emerson radio program. With your comments, questions, death threats, musings of an ironic nature, haiku, limerick, iambic pentameter, whatever it is you might have. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Or you can email Don Taylor, who sits across the table from me each and every weekday, providing the yang to my yin, the yoga to my John, the sunshine to my moon glow. That is don@rickemerson.com. Here's what's coming up today. We got a snuff watch on the way, corpse watch on the way, taser. Who died? Really? Somebody died? All right.
Yeah,
snuff watch on the way, corpse watch on the way, taser watch on the way. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, will join us later on the day. We'll do his top five. The top five songs to which he would brood or sulk as a young man. So those are coming up. Let's see what else. We got to recap Mad Men. Did you watch Mad Men last night?
I did indeed.
All right. So we'll talk about Mad Men. We're not going to talk about True Blood. I mean, you can talk about True Blood, but here's the thing. It's going to be the sound of one hand clapping.
I got nothing to say about it.
Have you even finished last night's True Blood?
No.
Hey, can I just tell you how much I don't regret getting off that train? I don't regret. Here's what I don't understand. Let me ask you this, Don Taylor. I don't understand why you continue to watch it. Now, I'm not saying that you got to be beholden to everything I do and like your whole life has to revolve around Rick Emerson. And that I'm not saying that you are the Deimos to my Mars or something. But I am saying that it seems like I watched True Blood the first season because you recommended it to us, which is not a thing I regret. First season, great. Second season, I dig Michelle Forbes. I can forgive a lot from Michelle Forbes. You know, she's there. It makes everything else sort of tolerable. This third season, I watched maybe the first however many, 5 or 6 episodes, however many it was, and I don't think I would have made it past. I think I would have quit at the end of season 2 of True Blood had it not been for the show. I think that became a thing
that I was watching just because it's a show that a lot of people watch, and so I wanted to be able to talk about it. And I don't know if you were the same way, but I do know that you didn't watch last week. You didn't finish last week, and I know you haven't finished last night, and I'm not watching it anymore, which means we're not really talking about it on the show. So as a result, I got to ask, what is your deal?
It was one of those things. I got up really, really early this morning. I had a lot of things to do, and as is my wont, I get up in the morning. On Monday morning, I seek out Mad Men from the night before, and I watch that. And then I came in here to the office early because I knew Greg and Sarah would not be here this morning, so I came in to have a nice, quiet little office time, and I was doing some stuff. And I realized, it's like, True Blood was on. I could go acquire that, and then I could watch it in a tiny little window of the corner of my computer I'm surfing news.
I could watch a terrible resolution version of the show on a screen the size of a matchbook.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, it would be like watching, a small TV on the other side of the room or something.
Which I can understand if you were watching something of quality, if Lawrence of Arabia was suddenly on or something.
It was just curiosity, is really all it was. Just mild curiosity.
I don't care. It's not like it's any skin off of my teeth. It doesn't really matter to me.
I didn't feel the need to maintain it.
I'm just saying that it's like I was at a BBQ on Saturday.
I was as well.
Were you?
A different one though.
My God. Wait, where was yours? Was yours like a work thing?
Mine semi-work. It was at Fat Boy Robert's home with his lovely girlfriend and a number of people.
Yeah, no, I went to this thing. It was at some friends of Lara, so we went to the Soapbox Derby, which was great, but goddamn, it just gets hotter up there every year. I think there's something where global warming is only true on Mount Tabor or whatever, or it's just getting closer to the sun somehow. It is unbelievably hot. She's up there, and fortunately, we only went for the end. And I know that all the cool cars are at the beginning, and all the cool soapbox stuff is at all the art stuff is at the front. But it's either that or sleeping in, and sleeping in wins most of the time. So we went to the Soapbox Derby, and then we went to she has some friends who live right at the base of Mount Tabor, so we went to a barbecue there, and a couple that we know, they own a couple of video stores, and they're also just big pop culture junkies. So they're always, just sort of power loading a lot of movies and TV shows. And we always fall into just having sort of, you were Bobby's house, the sort of half discussion, half argument about whatever. And so it's like this guy and my wife got into it about weeds, and then we were talking about Justified, which I guess we're all sort of on board with Justified. But then we were talking about True Blood, and with this whole argument about whether it's because... See, and here I am talking about the goddamn show again, even though I don't really care. True Blood has become one of those things... True Blood has become not unlike the third season of Californication, which, while terrible, was fascinating to me for reasons that had nothing to do with the quality of the writing. Just like just the discussion about the show and the show's dynamic itself is way more interesting than the actual show. Because we got into this big argument about whether or not True Blood was intentionally camp, third season. Whether they were steering into it and trying to make it kitschy, or whether it was still accidentally kitschy. And I said that I just felt like they were trying way too hard. It was sort of like the difference between an artist and an artisan. Creating something and then looking at a blueprint and trying to replicate it. And I think that's what they're doing at this point, which is why I quit.
And then that's part of the thing is, when I said I'm watching it out of curiosity, it's not like I'm... And like I said, I didn't watch all of last week's episode or all of this week's episode. I'm not watching it because I'm absorbed by the story or I give a damn about any of the characters or even that I'm being entertained by it. It's more like I'm observing it. I turned around to watch it
to perspective.
Just kind of see, okay, what weird crap are they going to do this week? It's like I'm looking at the mechanics of the show and not really actually enjoying it.
Okay, fair enough. It's to go back to this, and we were talking about, what the hell time is it? 1:28. All right.
I did want to tell you one quick story about, and it's very quick, but about being at Bobby's house this weekend.
Before you do that, let's find out what headlines you're tracking today, and then we'll actually get into the rest of what we did last night.
Okay.
Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
The Craigslist killer suspect, Philip Markoff, committed suicide. Former Eugene mayor, Mayor Bascom, was injured in a crash. And a man who agreed to save his brother's life by donating part of his liver died 4 days after the transplant.
Oh, chose poorly. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So blah, 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 Bobby Roberts, blah, 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 barbecue. You, Don Taylor, what?
Yeah, so I'm there at this barbecue, and Adam Roscoe, a bunch of the Atomic Arts people, because Bobby was in Trek in the Park. So a bunch of the Atomic Arts people were there. And Adam Roscoe was there, and I said, oh, hi, we talked on the the show. You did a phoner with the Emerson Show, blah, blah. We're talking. So I'm talking to him and sitting around with him and Mike Russell from The Oregonian, and we're talking. And Mike asks him if, you know, any kind of weird fan sort of things have happened now that, you know, they've been doing Trek in the Park.
Are there Trek in the Park groupies?
Well, yeah, and he tells this story that is really not my story to tell, so I won't go into much detail, but basically about some young ladies coming to the show with their boyfriends and then saying, so what do you guys do after the show? Where do you go? And they're like, we just go to somebody's house and drink beer, and then maybe we'll wander out to this bar. Oh, what bar, they say, and he tells them. And so they go to their friend's house, hang out for a while, and then like 3.5 hours later, they go to this bar, and these girls are sitting there waiting for them.
That's awesome.
And get up and walk over. And I look at him, and I say, so did you take advantage of the situation? And Anna Brosco swivels his head to the side and looks at me with this look of such offense.
A palpable disgust.
Yeah. And he said, no. And it was like, and I just had that moment that you have sometimes when you're talking to people where you just go, why am I even ever let out of the house to be around people?
You have nothing to apologize for there. I'm not saying that it's like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with his answer. You know, whatever.
I'm just saying he's telling this perfectly lovely anecdote, and then I'm like, so did you get any? I'm just like, I say this incredibly stupid, inappropriate thing.
Here's the thing. If it makes you feel any better, which it may not, because I've learned that really, don't take this the wrong way. I've learned that when you're in one of your moods, that really nothing will make you feel better. But I'm the same way, so that's the thing. You know, if you're going to beat yourself up about something, it doesn't really matter. That's just the road you're going to hoe, and there's nothing I can do. So this may or may not make you feel better, but for what it's worth, I would have asked the same thing.
Yeah. He didn't seem to hold it against me. I mean, when I left later, he was bye, Don, nice to see you. He was all friendly.
No, because he's a nice guy. You know, he's a legitimately nice guy. I would have asked, look, you can't. Can we just speak as men here? And I'm using that figuratively. Just speak as grown-ups. If you're a guy who has achieved, his current fame, and I'm sure he's going to go on to great things. He's a good guy, and I've talked to him a few times. He's obviously going places. But his current fame is largely tied to Trek in the Park. If you achieve your current fame because you are recreating, line for line, a Star Trek episode at the zoo or whatever, and then girls are indicating that they are sexually interested in you because, again, you recreated word for word a Star Trek episode. It is perfectly fair, and I would say culturally required, to ask if you're gonna kind of get your hump on there. Okay. It's exactly what I've. How can you not? How can you not say? So did you? So
that does make me feel better because I did. I just did immediately just sort of feel like, what's wrong with me? Why do I say things like that?
And I mean this in the best way, but no, F him, because I would have asked you the same thing. You, hey, Helen Nerd, did you take advantage of the free and easy sex that was offered your way, for being in Star Trek? I would completely have asked that. And if you look at it, you have nothing to be ashamed of there, Don. And I'm not saying he does either. There's nothing wrong with his answer. I'm not saying it's like that I think it's silly he didn't or whatever. I don't care. I'm just saying that is a thing that everybody would have asked. You were doing the Larry King there. You were asking the simple, direct question that inexplicably, though, no one probably would have asked. Christopher Reeve, can you have sex? There you go. You're the Larry King of the Rick Emerson Show. Let's see. What else do we have? Okay, so here's what's coming up. We got Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com will be doing the Week in Geek today. Ryan White of The Oregonian will be here. We'll talk about his top five songs to which he would brood as a young man. Let's see. I've got three great stories here, actually, that I... Now, you already read the goddamn Tila Tequila story. I should have known that you would be privy to it. You'd have it. I actually set it aside, though, but here's what you probably don't have, Dawn Taylor. You probably don't have the version of the Tila Tequila Insane Clown Posse story, and how glorious that I get to say that, that has all the message board comments from the Juggalos.
Oh, no, that I don't have. I do have a picture of her that she posted of herself showing off her injuries.
Hi, I'm a gremlin. I got a tiny face.
That's just creepy.
She's horrifically ugly. And I'm, whatever. Call me a sexist
in every sense of the word.
No, that's the thing. Outside, inside, upside, downside, backward, forward, inside. It doesn't matter. She's a troll. And I know that most guys, maybe not most guys will say that. I know a lot of guys are not thought of as being this way. But I will forgive a lot in terms of weird look, personality, sense of humor, talent. You take a homely chick, you put her on stage. If she can sing and play guitar really well, I'm in. That's the thing. So it's not like personality didn't count for anything. You make a chick rich, I am there. A woman who can buy and sell me is like the hottest thing on earth. So she ought to be clinging on the wing of a plane and staring at William Shatner. So anyway, and also I have to say this, I know this will sound retarded, and so I'm just gonna go right into that. I got kind of a soft spot for the Insane Clown Posse. For reasons that we can talk about later. It's not really important, but anyway. So I got the Tequila Clown, Insane Clown Posse thing. I got this. This is like an Onion thing, where the rest of the story is probably not that good, but it's all about the headline. Man kills friend, drinks his blood. I haven't even read the rest of the story, but it's like, do you need to? You know it's genius. What else? Let's see. I've got this. Did you see this thing about the truck at an off-road race that drove right into the crowd?
No.
Yeah.
No, I missed that one.
Oh. Well, if only he'd missed them, Don. Let's see what else. Well, and a bunch of other stuff. So, and we'll talk about Mad Men last night, which was great and all that. I made some notes to myself from this weekend. I'm not going to get to a lot. Some of this we'll have to wait on. I will say, you know that summer's really, truly here. I mean, it took months because we had the whole January thing, and then last month it was sort of rainy and drizzly. But, you know, it's been pretty warm the last few days. Here's the thing. My house will be cool when I get home because the air conditioner's running right now, keeping my dog cool. And then when I get home and I'm going to walk in, it's going to be a perfect 72 degrees when I walk in the front door. Here's the thing. Can I just tell you all this? I woke up in the middle of the night last night. I had to get up and go put on like a long sleeve shirt. It was too chilly in my room. I made some notes from this weekend, and I'll just do like a couple of them here.
Can I mention also later in the show, I will have my installment of Confidential to That Guy.
Yes, we have a new feature on the Rick Emerson radio program. It's Confidential to That Guy, in which we alert a member of society that his actions are not in keeping with being a decent human being. But here's the first sign that summer is actually truly here, however brief it may be, and that is I went to Plaid Pantry, and for the first time this year, when I bought something for $6 and I gave the guy $20, got a handful of damp money out of the register.
Oh, nice.
Damp bills.
Ah.
There you go. And normally that's a thing that I give. I give the dampness. I don't receive it. And you feel bad, but at the same time, you're glad to be getting rid of the damp money, aren't you? Like, here you go, sir. 5, 6, and 7. Sorry, they're damp. Oh. And you know that guy's just thinking, they're going, God damn, I hate you. Stupid customer. Stupid damp money having customer.
Speaking of the Trek in the Park guys, Jesse Groff, who played Spock. He works at a Plaid Pantry. He talks about it on his Twitter occasionally.
No, it's a sad existence.
Yeah, it seems to be everything you would think.
I worked at a 7-Eleven in San Diego, and in a not particularly desirable part of town, from midnight to 6. So you know, I'm sure that experience hasn't changed a whole lot. Anyway, so I got a handful of damp money, Soapbox Derby, and then. You know what I brought to the barbecue, because it was like a potluck style thing.
Triscuits?
No. Well, close. Here's the thing, and it wasn't my fault this time. It was a potluck, and the guy was barbecuing. You know how the deal is. Like, he's making the main course. Everybody else is supposed to bring sides or dessert or whatever. We were supposed to bring a pasta salad, but the deal is we were going directly from the house to the park for the Soapbox Derby to his house. And it's like, you can't just leave pasta salad. You know, like, even for me, you don't want to leave that sitting in the sun for 3 hours and eat it. Even I might not do that. We should just hit, look, it's tacky, but let's go to, like, Fred Meyer, Safeway. We'll go to the deli, bring some purchased pasta salad. Not that it's bad, but I'm saying, you know, instead of making our own, we'll just stop and get some.
Don't you have one of those little individual-sized, like, sort of lunchbox-sized coolers?
I don't know.
Pasta salad?
Do I look like I have breasts? That is not a thing I know. I'm not saying it's ladies' work, but I'm saying in my home, that is the work of the lady of the house. Not because it's her job. It's because she likes to do that. I like to do it. She likes to cook. Guess what? You get to cook. But I actually said, look, we didn't have any pasta salad made. You know, that we don't want to be stooges. Let's just stop by 7-Eleven or 7-Eleven Safeway or whatever, and we'll just pick up, you know, something for the deli. She actually says, no. We'll just go to a convenience store. And I said, you know, there's no pasta salad at the convenience store unless you found some secret convenience store that I haven't, you know, not aware of. And it wasn't even like we went to a 7-Eleven. We went to one of those, you know, it's like some Vietnamese guy and there's bars on the window, you know, or whatever. And it's, you know, and it's got like, you know, it's got the character writing out front. It's a guy named Han with a shotgun behind the counter. And if you stop moving, You know, like, have you ever been to one of those convenience stores where, and I hate to stereotype, but in my experience, this is usually a thing where there is an Asian proprietor.
And the inside of the store always smells like moldy air conditioning and Smarties.
Yes. But it's the thing where if you linger, and this happens to me less and less as I get older, but if you linger for even a moment, there's that the suspicious voice behind the counter, you know, what you buy? You know, and it's just like, I'm just looking, sir. You know, it's not a library. Why you go? You know, so we're in this convenience store, and so Lara just says, well, why don't we just get some Pringles? I'm like, baby, they're expecting us to have brought a homemade pasta salad dish. You can't bring Pringles. And she's like, no, it'll be fine. And so with that permission, I just went and I just bought a bunch of, like, bagged crap from the convenience store. I bought the most glorious snack that I didn't even know it existed. And I went in the space of 5 minutes, not knowing it existed, to it being my new god. It's like that time I went through this phase where I ate chocolate Chex Mix, but then I burned out on it. You know what I had over the weekend, Don? Chocolate peanut butter Bugles. Now, they don't sound like they would be good.
Oh, yes, they do.
Here's the thing. They're even better than you can imagine.
They sound amazing.
They are even better than your tiny human mind can conceive. You have no idea. I actually wish that I had never tasted them. I wish that I did not know how. I wish that no man had known what I knew now with the knowing and the. Anyway, they're good. This is the thing. They're awesome. So
yeah, I went to somebody's house a couple of months ago, and they had these things from from Trader Joe's, and they were chocolate covered the little mini Ritz cracker sandwiches.
Yeah,
with the peanut
butter. I know what you're talking about there.
And so I went, and they were like, "These are awesome!" And it's a package like this. It's only 99 cents. So like a couple of weeks ago, went back to Trader Joe's, looked, couldn't find them. Asked the guy, "Oh yeah, we don't have those anymore."
Oh no, we've discontinued that item you liked,
yeah,
sir.
Why? Because they were too awesome.
Yeah, no.
That's, God damn you, Trader Joe's.
Damn you to hell. I can make them discontinue foods by doing that. You know, just by latching onto something. You know, if to, hey, I really like this Crystal Pepsi. Crap. You know, then it's just gone. So anyway, I'm just saying,
covered peanut butter.
Here's the thing. We have to make a solemn pinky swear, though. Don't buy any tonight. I'll bring some. And if Patrick gets them, don't eat them. Here's the thing. I want you to try them on the air so the audience can hear your ecstasy.
It's so sad. Bugles are one of those things that I can actually remember the first time I ever tasted a bugle. It was on a vacation in Mexico with my family, and we were just south of the border. And my dad had picked up some food at some, you know, store somewhere, and they had bought these bugles, and I'd never had bugles before. I was like about 7 or 8 years old, and I will always remember that. It's like the shape being really unusual, the strange.
Did you put them on the end of your fingers?
Yeah, and then actually taste them, just going, oh, this is the best thing I've ever had.
I'm telling you, these chocolate peanut butter bugles are like they're manna from heaven. I mean, it's just they're awesome. So that's all on the way. And it seems like we had whatever. I mean, I don't know. It seems like there was other stuff I needed to promote here at the beginning, but I just, it's all escaped me. Well, I should mention this, actually. Or should I? I don't even know. There's a schedule in front of me, but it's covered by other things. It is the definition of out of sight, out of mind.
Well, we didn't.
Don, you have a schedule in front of you. Yeah. Is there something I should be mentioning?
No,
never mind. Well, F that. Yeah, all right, it's 503-505-6964. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A former medical student accused of killing a masseuse he met through Craigslist committed suicide in the Boston jail where he was awaiting trial. Philip Markoff, 24, was found unresponsive in his cell Sunday morning in the Nashua Street Jail, the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office said. This is in Boston. He was pronounced dead at about 10:15 a.m. Markoff was alone in his cell, the statement said, and all evidence collected thus far indicates that he took his own life. Markoff, a former Boston University student, pleaded not guilty in the fatal shooting of Julissa Brisman of New York City and the armed robbery of a Las Vegas woman. Both crimes happened at Boston hotels within the span of 4 days in April 2009. His trial in Massachusetts was expected in March. Markoff had met the women through advertisements for erotic services posted on Craigslist. The Boston Police Crime Lab identified two bloodstains taken from swabs on a handgun that was seized and said that Markoff used the weapon to bludgeon Brisman before she was shot 3 times at close range.
Well, I mean, but he look at it this way. He has saved the legal system a great deal of time and money.
He was engaged at the time of his arrest. His fiancée, Megan McAllister, ended the relationship with Markoff after visiting him in jail, and their wedding, scheduled for August 14th, 2009, was canceled.
Well, you know, she was just anticipating all of the hot Craigslist killer groupies. Is the seriously, you were talking about, I don't mean to equate Adam Roscoe with the Craigslist killer, alleged. Well, he's dead. He did it. Nor am I trying to diminish the allure of Adam Roscoe himself, but it's just, it's interesting when you think about, you know, you were talking last week about the Richard Ramirez guy, and, you know, and he's got all those, like, hot babes that would show up, and, you know, Richard Ramirez, you know, please violate me in the name of Satan, or whatever. You know, and then Adam Roscoe gets, you know, the Star Trek, the chicks are all into him because he's in Trek in the Park. It just makes you wonder if there is, in fact, a groupie for, like, every profession and type, especially in you know, if you're in the public eye in some way. But if there is just a groupie for every single job, because it's well known that, like, cops, you know, there's cop-specific groupies. And there's groupies, obviously, for musicians. And there's, you know, there's groupies for teachers.
For firemen.
Yeah, firemen, guys in uniform.
There's some jobs, though, like my husband worked for about a year and a half as an exterminator for Terminix. I don't think there's a lot of exterminator groupies.
You don't think so? You don't think he was going and there was like housewives who were like, you know, I love a man who holds the power of life and death in his hands.
I actually was, I have to admit to a certain extent, I was kind of hoping that would happen because I kept thinking, you know, you are in such like a porn movie job now.
Seriously.
You know, and the only thing that ever really happened to him is
here to spray your interior.
Yeah, a couple of times he showed up at people's houses that he'd been scheduled to come and do the Terminix stuff, and the people weren't home, but the teenage daughter was home early from school with the boyfriend.
Of course, yeah.
And they weren't. They obviously didn't realize that the Terminix guy was coming.
Do I not even get a courtesy chuckle for I'm here to spray your interior?
Okay, that was funny.
All right, that's fine. Look at it, whatever. Yeah, I mean, don't force it. I'm just saying. It seems like that's moderately amusing.
But I when I was at this barbecue, by the way, I wanted really much, very much to meet Jesse Graff. Because I think he's kind of awesome, and he was really good as Spock, and he's very tall.
He's great. No, he's a huge guy. He's like one of those. Never mind. But yeah, he's.
But I wanted to meet him, and I saw the his tattoo. By the way,
I don't think I've seen it.
He met Leonard Nimoy not too long ago, and got Leonard Nimoy to sign his arm.
Get the signature autograph.
And then he went and got the tattoo.
That's
so
awesome.
I saw that. But I wanted to actually meet him because it was one of those things where, like, I'm going to do some projects in the future, and I was thinking it'd be nice to be able to approach him and ask him if he was interested. And then I'd already know him because I'd have met him. But the thing is, the whole time at the whole party, he was always just surrounded by the other, like, Atomic Arts people and stuff like that.
Right.
And I had no in, and I didn't want to just walk up to a group of people I don't know and be like, hi, I'm walking over here to talk to you now.
Your in. Your in is that you're Dawn Taylor. Please, come on,
well,
sister.
Well, it didn't feel... And all, how is that my... Then if I walk up and I say, I'm Dawn Taylor.
Who?
I'm co-host of the Rick Emerson Show, or whatever. Then I sound like a pretentious twit.
No. You don't even say that. You just say... No. You act as though it needs no explanation.
Like, I'm Dawn Taylor.
I'm Dawn Taylor. And he goes... And if for whatever reason he didn't register it right away, you just plunge on ahead. You don't wait for them.
I kept waiting for him to be like kind of by himself, sort of like a gazelle,
no,
like
but you,
wandering away from the herd.
No, because you
so
know how
to go talk to him, and it never happened.
You know, look, and again, I love all those guys. They're great. They've been on Outlook Portland a couple times. Adam Roscoe's been on. He's been on this show too. And Jesse Graff, he was in Nosferatu too. When he did Nosferatu. He's a great guy. He is one of those Ted Cassidy guys that's like 100 feet tall. But you know, when you go to any sort of a social event with the guys from Atomic Arts, it's, I mean. Let's just be honest. I mean, drama nerds are drama nerds. I mean, they're just going to cling in small, huddled groups, you know, for the entirety of the night. That's what they do. I've been there. That's really they don't travel much on their own.
Did you see this episode, the Space Seed?
No, I did not. Laura went. I didn't.
There's the character. I can't remember her name at the moment. The character who's like the archaeologist who gets involved with Khan. Yep, that one. Anyway, the actress who played her came to the party on Saturday. And she's a lovely woman. I will say this, a very lovely woman. And she was wearing one of those skin-tight dresses that only comes to, like, just above the crotch.
Right.
And it was, like, sort of backless, but she had, like, this sheer black bra on. So you had, well, then she had her back to you. There was the sheer black
I like
bra
what we're saying.
Back of the thing. And it was one of those things that, as a woman, I'm always intensely uncomfortable with other very attractive women who are showing either... that much, like, just sort of nuclear
look
self-confidence.
At my body. Yeah.
Or some kind of nuclear self-esteem issue that says, look at me, look at me, look
yeah.
at me. And I'm never sure which it is, and I don't know how to respond to it. So I just kind of, it just makes me twitchy and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well.
And watching all the guys at the party try not to stare at her too much, even though their heads kept swiveling in that direction.
I get it. And that's one of those things where guys just don't, like, I don't think there's any male equivalent to that. Because first of all, it's not like I go to a party and there's a guy there in a Speedo or anything. It's like I don't have, you know, there's no...
Well, if there was some super muscular, like, dancer guy or something, like Baryshnikov or something showed up, and his shirt was unbuttoned and flowing around
but
wouldn't you be a little uncomfortable?
Yeah, but that never happens. That's why I'd be uncomfortable, because yeah. I'd be like, because if that happened, I'd say to myself, why am I in White Knights? I would be uncomfortable, not because there was, like, a guy with his shirt unbuttoned. I'd be uncomfortable because I would be looking at my phone wondering if I was at the wrong house or something. I guess my point is that you go to any sort of a social gathering, and there's always going to be some chick there, you know, that's got something plunging or tight or whatever. You're dressed in some way that guys, you know, intentionally or not, the guys are paying a lot of attention to her. But, you know, it's not like you go... Unless you're just some dick who hangs out, like, unless you're one of those douchebags who's down on, like, 3rd and Burnside every Saturday night, like, sort of awash in bad cologne with your chest recently waxed, I'm not around a lot of guys who have their shirt unbuttoned to their navel and have, like, a bronzed, you know, set of pecs sticking out of me. Guys just don't do that. That's not how guys show off. You know, the guy equivalent to that is when you go to a party and there's just, somebody there who's, you know, much more funny or interesting. Or
stinking rich or something.
Yeah, I was actually going to say this.
You're at a party with Phil Knight or something?
This has happened to me twice, actually. Once. Since we're going back to last week, once I was at a poker party, and I won't say who the other guy is, but I was at a poker party once, and I'm doing that thing. I was talking to Courtney Hommeister about this weekend. I'm doing that thing, the pause, which is inevitably followed by saying what I'm thinking I probably shouldn't say, and then I just say it anyway. I was telling her, I'm like, you know, the longer you're on the radio, get used to this. And I was laying out how you'll pause, and you'll go, oh, I shouldn't. Well, I really, oh, I don't know if he'd like me to tell. Well, screw it. Here's what happened. Well, I'll just say that I was at a guy's house, and first of all, it was a weird house. It was a weird poker party anyway, because there were these chicks there who I later found out were models for this magazine called Perfect 10. And the thing about Perfect 10 is it's like, I think it's gone now. I don't even still around. But the shtick of Perfect 10 is that it's these, like, hot babes who have had no plastic surgery. That's, like, the whole selling point. And I was like, who are these girls who are, like, bringing drinks from the kid? Made me wish that I was a drinker, because then I could say, like, hey, sidecar, please, thanks. Buy yourself something shiny and give her, give her a tip. But, you know, so I'm just sitting here watching these girls, like, bring drinks to the table. I'm thinking, well, this is odd. You know, I've never been to a poker party where there's just, like, chicks around bringing drinks. I feel very strange. I need to go home. Girls frighten me. And then at one point, a guy gets on the phone and goes, well, let me see what the holdup is. And I'm like, well, who are we talking about? And he gets on his speed. And it turns out that it's, like, some party set up by Art Alexakis. And then he's, like, speed dialing him to get him to, like, come to the party. Because it turns out I think why the girls were there. They sort of either knew him or they knew he was going to be there or whatever. And so that's party number one, which is, like, completely weird. Number two, it was – I won't say the name of the company, but it was a guy who owns a very large car dealership, a chain of car selling places, a chain of car lots here in Portland. And he has – I think the biggest, most expensive house that I have ever been in real life, meaning not like one of those, like, Street of Dreams houses or something. I mean, like, an actual house where, like, a guy, you know, lives. The biggest, largest, I wouldn't even say gaudy. It was just freaking huge. And where you walk in, you go, like, this is a rich person's house. It was in some part of town that I don't even think it's a part of town that you can see unless you have an invite. I think there's some invisible, like, Harry Potter cloak over, like, his neighborhood. I don't even think you can find it, like, unless he's, like, turned off, like, the tractor cloaking beam while you arrive. And I just remember being in this house and just thinking, Christ almighty, like, if I sold everything I own, I could not buy one room of this house. Also, he drank two bottles of red wine by himself during the course of the evening and cleaned us all out at the poker table. So I'd like to say right now, I hope you die poor and alone, you dick. But it was like a mixed game where there were men and women there. Thankfully, my wife was not there, to look at him and then at me and then at him and then at me and then to realize how poorly she had judged, you know, when marrying. But you could tell that, like, every woman there was just looking around going, I wonder what it's like to live in a place like this. I wonder what it would take to live in a place like this. I wonder if I could seduce that guy by the end of the night. And the guys all are sort of aware that the chicks are really into the house. So that's, I think, the only equivalent I can think of.
I can see that.
So it's just it's a whole weird thing. But it's not like some guy shows up at a party, we all go, like, look at the package on that guy. I feel so threatened. So that is a thing That is a thing, fortunately, that I don't have to deal with. Of my many neuroses, that is not one. Because it wouldn't do any good. Because I'm just all spindly and pale and frail and hideous and horrid. So, whatever. I mean, that's a race I'm never going to win. You know what I mean? So, you're a lovely woman, though, Don.
Well, thank you very much.
What are we doing? Let's just do some more news.
Actually.
Yes?
Actually.
I was playing the news sounder, Don.
We need to go to Week in Geek and bring in Ryan White.
Fine.
Run sheet. There's a run sheet.
All right, fine.
I need a run sheet.
You and your schedule. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. What sort of musical mood are you in today, Don Taylor?
Angry.
Really?
Angry musical mood.
Because I should say this, that before the program, before the Legion of News even, it was like 11:30, Don said, I should tell you I'm in a bit of a mood. And I didn't, and I was asking you to sort of clarify that. As it turns out, it is not, in fact, nature's special time. This is this is a whole separate thing.
I will tell you, though, it is a completely separate thing. It is my quarterly.
Would you call it a quarterly?
Emotional breakdown.
Is it really
meltdown.
Like a four times a year sort of a
thing?
Yeah,
pretty much. About every 3 months, everything is built up to a point where I just go.
So
weep inconsolably for about 15 minutes.
And so here's the reason I actually made that joke is because guys don't know how anything works.
Yeah.
Is it not that as such, but is it like a is it? Do you believe in some way that it is not the same thing as, but functioning in the same way as the other thing, in that it is like a chemical or hormonal thing that happens like every 90 days or so? Because biorhythms, and people have that's a real thing. People have that.
No, I think it's psychological. It's because I have a tendency to, just try and keep everything pushed down, like sort of a pressure cooker. Like I'm in control. I'm handling everything, even though I'm stressing and realizing I'm not handling everything. And about, every 3 months, I hit this wall where suddenly something will happen, and I'll just go, "I'm not handling everything," and I just kind of lose it, and then I just completely overreact and feel miserable. And unfortunately, I think in this case, I told you that it had nothing to do with the other thing, the lady thing, but given the way I'm kind of also feeling physically, it could be a little of both. It could have actually been set off by something hormonal. I don't know.
It's my best day ever.
It is your best day ever.
Oh,
and you're
awesome.
locked in a tiny room with me all day.
Well,
tomorrow. The day after that.
I like to think of it as sort of working off whatever time in the afterlife I will have to spend in a spirit prison, as the Mormons would say. All right, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We come back. We got Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian. We'll talk to him about musical happenings. Count down his top 5 teenage brooding songs of all time. We got the Clown Watch, Snuff Watch, Corpse Watch, Taser Watch. We got to talk about Mad Men. Let's see. I got this thing about a bunch of people getting killed doing a thing. Guy drinks his friend's blood. It's just
this is gonna be the busiest hour ever.
It's just legally speaking, it's just it's too much show. So we'll do that, and we'll have a little musical interlude on the other side of this. The Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Where? That's right. It is the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, programs. I am Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and this is the one and only Week in Geek, starting off with a couple of local events. First, on Saturday, August 21st at 1800 East Burnside, the second annual Bacon Fest. Yes, only in Portland can you and over 2,500 fellow carnivores take in a festival dedicated to nature's candy, sweet, sweet bacon. With contests, prizes, and bands, Bacon Fest starts at noon and goes until 8 p.m. Or, your heart explodes. Once you recover from the salty goodness of Bacon Fest, you will want to get your epic D&D on as Guardian Games helps celebrate the release of the fan-demanded Dark Sun setting, the first and only RPG setting that lets you play a man-sized praying mantis. Dark Sun has been high on gamer demand since Wizards of the Coast took over Dungeons & Dragons over 15 years ago. The gaming starts at 11 a.m. on Sunday, August 22nd at Guardian Games. Finally, good news from Star Wars Celebration 5. George Lucas has found yet another way for us nerds to buy the saga on DVD. The Flannel One announced that Star Wars will hit Blu-ray in 2011. To guarantee that we'll pay, this new set will finally show the much-rumored Luke building his lightsaber montage, cut from the first, second, third, and fourth theatrical releases of Return of the Jedi. Damn you, Lucas! Damn your bleak black heart! I am Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and that was your week in Geek.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. It's so quaint that people were upset by that song.
Yeah.
It was a simpler time. Also, there were things on the album that were really more deserving, I think, of complaint than that. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you'd like to join us, you can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. And is the text box working again?
It is indeed.
There was a time where that wasn't working, and now it's working.
It was very brief.
All right. So the live chat is open at rickemerson.com. You just go there to the Rick Emerson Show page, and there's a thing that says live chat. Bada bing, you're good. In just a moment, we'll welcome Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian. Talk about music happenings in Portland and beyond. And we'll count down later on his top five teenage brooding songs. Top five songs to which he would sulk as a boy and perhaps as a man. As we've got all that coming up, let's see. Mad Men recap. We got this tequila juggalo thing to get to. It's a world gone not just crazy, but also aggressively, sadistically crazy. So, And we are here to document every step of mankind's implosion. So we'll do all of these stories here at some point before the end of the show and so forth. Later on, we will also talk about our good friend, the cleaning solution. The cleaning solution in the person of Mr. Michael Beatty. Mr. Michael Beatty is the proprietor of the cleaning solution, and they can clean anything your feet touch, anything you might walk on in your home, be it tile, be it be it upholstery, be it linoleum, your carpet, your whatever. So we'll talk about that here in just a bit. Don Taylor is at the news desk. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you today? What stories will we be finding out more about in just a second?
Well, we're going to hear about an axe-wielding man in St. Helens. I believe we're going to hear that Hillary Duff got married. Got a little Zsa Zsa Gabor news.
I thought Hillary Duff was still like 12.
No.
All right.
It's
okay.
Been a while. And we have a snuff watch right here for you.
Awesome. So we'll get to all that here in just a second. Again, the cleaning solution at 971-533-3211. In the meantime, in between time, Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian joining us here today. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am good. How are you guys?
Listen to you on that glorious microphone that isn't like the kids' card table at Thanksgiving microphone that we were stuck with the last couple of weeks.
I think this is the one from 3 weeks ago.
It is. Well,
you change them up on me every week when I come in.
That is the one from 3 weeks ago, because the one from 3 weeks ago is ostensibly in an ideal world with all things being equal, according to Hoyle, that is the permanent guest microphone. But there was this sort of weird shuffling thing where this microphone here was being fixed, and so everything just sort of rotated. And then, unfortunately,
and by everything rotated, he means he took my microphone.
Yes, I did,
and gave me another one.
And see, I just thought it was a weekly game of let's F with the print guy who thinks you can just talk into a microphone in any way, shape, or form.
No. That's
it was.
Well, yes.
Yeah. And that's fine.
There's a little bit of too much of that in the world at this point already. I can just plug any microphone into this thing and just talk. It'll be great.
Oh, I thought you meant messing with print people.
Well, that as well. But
there's not enough of that, right?
I don't really need to do that. That game has already been been played for me. All right. So we got your top five coming up and so forth. What is happening in the world of music, sir?
I've just been probably as obsessed with you are with the Tila Tequila Juggalo story.
It's the best story. It's so great.
I did a big blog post on it this morning.
So let me just ask you now, Don, because here's the thing is that so we were going to do this as a clown watch, and then led to a whole there was like
but
all
it's
this
so much more.
See, but and there was all this contention about like is it a clown watch? Are the Juggalos clowns? What is poetry? And there was just all of this like we couldn't really it just became this. It just became this house of mirrors from which there was no escape.
I believe firmly that the Insane Clown Posse and the Juggalos do not count as true clowns.
She thinks they're like pseudo clowns or something.
I think they're paying homage to clowns. They're not actual clowns.
I think you're being generous that you think any of them know the word homage.
She thinks that they're sort of they're pseudo clowns. They're faux clowns.
Yes.
Don't even know how magnets work.
See, but you want to talk about?
I don't know homage.
Giraffes. What's with that anyway?
Talk about a thing that just became a meme in like 5 seconds. And it's funny that the magnets line in that song is what everybody immediately gravitated to.
What was great about that is the first time I saw it, and obviously, like, you know, everybody else who has access to the internet went to do a blog post on it.
Yeah.
And so I was looking on YouTube for magnet videos, and there's like a 3-part Bill Nye the Science Guy video. And when I got there, the first comment on part one was, "So that's how effing magnets work."
I am no one to judge. By the way, it's not like I'm in any position to criticize the Insane Clown Posse for not understanding how magnets work. You realize that I am in fact. Now, Sarah was with me on this.
But you don't think they're miracles.
Well, how would I know, though? I mean, I can't explain to you how they work. So therefore, if you told me Jesus did it, I would have no prevailing counter-argument.
You're basically a well-spoken Aborigine.
I mean, that's it. I mean, that's, one of the most famous moments of retardation on this program was something that Sarah and I did. And I'm not trying to, like, put her just, like, in the jackpot with me, but it was both of us, where we spent about, I don't know, I mean, like, maybe 5 minutes on the show trying to figure out if Siamese twins could be joined at the hair.
And like I'm, just tangled together,
yeah.
like if you grab braids from two different people and tied them in a knot.
And I'm not even really making that up. That is a thing that we actually spent time trying to figure out. Like, can Siamese twins
strands of hair with two
be joined to the
roots?
Hair?
Well, you know, like roots in both their.
Well, you
heads.
Know, like conjoined twins,
right?
Yes.
We're like, well, could they be joined at the hair? And then finally, all the phone lines were ringing, and we answered the phone, and somebody just said, "Wouldn't you just cut the hair?" And then. And then he hung up, and we looked at each other and we went, oh, let's never speak of this again. But now, but that gets brought up probably once a week to me in email, that I thought Siamese twins could be joined at the hair, and that there would be like, then, well, what would you do about it? So it's not like I'm in any position, you know, to say, well, you know, you ought to know how magnets work. And tabletop fusion.
To be fair, I was just checking my voicemail at work before I came over here, and I had forwarded to me from my editor a voicemail from somebody who was very angry. On Friday in A&E, we had a big piece on Lady Gaga. And we included that photo of her falling on her face in Heathrow Airport, where she was wearing, like, the 21-inch platforms or whatever, which, you know, and I wrote a caption for it, something about, you know, like, high fashion can be dangerous kind of thing. And this guy just, he was angry at us. A lot of people were angry at us, he said, for including that photo. And he hopes that we spend some real time over the weekend thinking about what it is that we did.
Now, why was he angry?
I don't know. But, you know, who knows? Maybe he was right. Maybe I did do something horrible and I should be thinking about it.
It was,
who am I to say?
It was that he felt that you were unfairly mocking her injury or something. I mean, she just tripped.
I don't even think she was injured.
People
was wearing what amount to stilts for most people.
Well, and she was wearing those big they're sort of like the inverse of those jeans that the youth wore when I was growing up, where it's like the ankles zipped to make them all, except her ankles zipped, but then also they're like big like circus tent, you know, at the ends.
There was, and I put this in the story at Lollapalooza last week, and somebody asked Jeff Tweedy of Wilco about Lady Gaga, and he said, you know, I don't really know anything about her, but I do know it takes a lot of work to be her. Like, most of us, when we're going to the airport, okay, what's the footwear that will be the easiest through security?
Right.
21, 24-inch platforms cannot be easy to take on and off going through security. Especially on an international flight, which I would assume is harder.
That's got to be one of those things where they can't imagine they're sticking her on, like, a, you know, an Alaska Airlines flight or something.
Well, I'm sure she's in first class.
Well, or on her own. Well, that's one of the, you know, like, Eddie Van Halen got busted a couple years ago for having a handgun. On a plane, like it sounds dumb, but it was an honest mistake. He was going through the X-ray, and they're like, you know, and it's that whole thing. And he's got a gun, you know. And then
But to be fair, the same thing happened to Harry Connick Jr.
They asked Eddie Van Halen, and he's like, do you know how often every year I have to fly in a regular airplane with regular people? He's like, never. No. Like, I have a plane, and I have a guy who flies it. I just get to do whatever. And he didn't make any bones about it. He didn't seem like he was even being a dick about it. He's just like, I have my own plane. I get to do whatever I want. So I didn't know.
Messed up.
Yeah, he's like, it was just in my bag. Sorry. all right. So we'll get to Lady Gaga, the tequila thing here in just a few.
Yes.
And so forth. Let's do this. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Why don't we do our snuff watch?
All right, ladies and gentlefolk, here is your snuff watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's your snuff watch for Monday.
Robert Wilson, bassist with funk and R&B group The Gap Band, has died at the age of 53. His publicist, Karen Lee, confirmed the news. Wilson had been on tour in the U.S. during the past few weeks. Wilson was joined in the band by his brothers, Charlie Wilson, the lead singer, and drummer Ronnie Wilson, who formed the band when he was 14. The group scored hits in the U.K. in the 1980s with Oops, Upside Your Head, Big Fun, and Party Lights. The trio grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and soon began honing their musical talent, singing and playing in their father's Pentecostal church. Robert Wilson, the youngest of the three, was asked to join the group by his brother Ronnie after the original bass player quit.
Being the bassist for the Gap Band, it's like, you know, it's like being the keyboard player for the average white band. You're one of those guys who, I mean, I guess you're famous, sort of, in a way
you're
that
in a band.
Entails no one anywhere knowing who you are or recognizing your name. Because
that's the best kind of famous to be, I would think, though. You can still, like, go to the grocery store and not have people stare at you.
I have determined
this. But you still have money and groupies.
I've actually thought about that. I was listening to, there's the audiobook for Henry Rollins' Black Flag bio, you know, his sort of, you know, the Get in the Van book where he just talks about, and it's his diarrhea entries and whatever from touring with Black Flag. And he talks about how for the first, when he first joined the band and he was replacing the original lead singer, they finished out the tour with the original guy on vocals, and Henry was just sort of doing the roadie work or whatever. But before the first gig where he actually performed, talked about how nobody knew what the new Black Flag singer looked like, and so he was actually able to sort of walk around in the crowd, just sort of, you know, people going, I wonder who the new singer for Black Flag is going to be. And he was sort of milling among them a god walking among them as a man. And he said that that was a really great and sort of surreal thing. And that got me thinking, I have decided that the single best rock star experience ever had to have been, and I think that this is beyond, I don't even know that this can be disputed. This isn't just a me being biased and being me thing. I think the single best rock experience on earth must have been to be like one of the Kiss guys in like about 77, when you were like the biggest thing on earth. And yet, because Ace Frehley talks about how he would go to Kiss shows and he would actually just wander through the crowd and just stand in the audience. And he's like, well, I always wanted to know what it was like to see Kiss, but I never knew. So I'd just go stand in the crowd. And he would just go to someplace where they're playing in front of 95,000 people, like at the Silverdome or something. And he would just go and he would stand in the middle of 100,000 people there to see him. And he'd go, wow, that was pretty great. And then he would just sort of, you know. And then he would
I
just
know Israeli was a pterodactyl.
Does he really talk like a parrot?
Have you never seen the legendary Tom Snyder interview with Kiss?
No, I
haven't. Oh, no. See, here's the thing. Kiss fan, not Kiss fan, doesn't matter. That's a thing you got to see. That is... If the internet had existed then, or Kiss existed now in that way, that would be one of those like things that immediately, that would be like the F for Magnets thing that would have been given. Kiss did this notorious interview with Tom Snyder in 79, I think, to promote the Dynasty album. And it was like, it was one of those things where the band clearly had split into two factions like years before that. The teetotaling, we're just here for the money faction, which is Gene and Paul, and the... I'm just going to stay in my room hoovering up cocaine and drinking Jack Daniels faction, which is Ace and Peter. But there was just so much money at stake that you know that there was some Doc McGee type guy in a room going, guys, just keep it together. They look good. Just keep it together for another 2 years and then we'll all be able to retire. So they would go out and they would do, but they all did, and Ace and Peter were just hammered all the time. And Gene and Paul were completely like they're straight and just totally the eye on the money. But they all realized, like, that it didn't work if they weren't all there. So there's this interview they did with Tom Snyder, and it's the classic Tom Snyder show from, he was doing in 79. And Ace and Peter are unbelievably hammered. And, I mean, Ace especially, because Peter would get high, but Ace was drunk. And Ace was, and there's happy drunks and there's angry drunks, and Ace is a giggly drunk. And so you've got Kiss, and they're in, like, full-on makeup. Because nobody knew what they looked like and whatever. And then the full huge thing, and Gene is, and of course Gene is, he's trying to be sort of charismatic, but also he's got a job to do, right? Like, Gene's whole thing is like, I'm here to make sure that you give me all of your money and whatever I need. And he's trying to keep control of the interview. And every time Snyder would ask a question, Ace would just say something nonsensical and then kind of go, nah! And then just start, and then...
You make him sound like, as if Jay Leno was a green-tailed macaw.
I'm going to find it. No, seriously. Next time we take a break, I'm going to come back and I'll play some of it. And then he would just cackle. And at one point, I forget if he actually falls out of his chair, but he sort of eats that thing where he cracks himself up, as the drunk often do. And he very nearly just like keels over and falls out of his chair, which of course, he and Peter are just then escalating. And, then it's two gigglers. And you look, and occasionally the camera would shift angles and you would see Gene and Paul there. And it's like, it is that whole, like, if looks could kill. I mean, where you can just see, like, the eyes getting narrower and narrower. And where Gene is just thinking, like, I am going to rape you with a coat hanger when we get back in the dressing room. Because he's just seeing, like, the blown promotional opportunity. And it became instantly notorious. There's the defining moment there is when Tom says, so you're all in Kiss and you're out there and you're touring and is it fun? Do you enjoy it? And Ace just says, I'm just doing this till I can become a plumber. And then he just cackles into giggles. So anyway, it's just but that was it. But to be that guy in that band and yet to be able to walk down the street every day and to have almost no one know who you are. I mean, I think you can count on less than one hand the number of band guys who have ever been able to do that. I mean, that must be a rarefied kind of experience. So Don Taylor at the news desk.
Police arrested a man in St. Helens after the man reportedly swung an axe at them. A woman had called police saying her son had threatened her with an axe. Officers responded to the home on Old Portland Road in St. Helens and say the man swung the weapon at them and told them to shoot him.
Can I ax you this?
The man then barricaded himself in the home. After trying to talk the man out for several hours, officers breached a window. One officer then tased the man through the window, enabled the SWAT team to get inside and subdue the man.
I won't point out that almost sounds like a taser watch. That
I have an actual taser watch,
okay,
though,
right,
that's a better taser
watch. So comparatively speaking, you're saying that was not really... Okay, didn't really... Okay, I understand.
So now we could move on to the actual taser watch, or I could read my... my letter to the guy.
Is this the, what have we decided to call this? The confidential to that guy?
Confidential to that guy.
Let's do that going into whenever we take our next momentary break or whatever. All right, so we'll just, you want to do the taser watch
Let's do the taser
watch. All right, here's your taser watch from Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Here's Don Taylor with your Taser Watch for Monday.
A 24-year-old Florida man.
Damn you. Damn you and your black heart, which pumps not blood like a human heart, but just a thick, guile-filled hate. I'm sorry, where?
Florida.
And that may have been a little hyperbolic there. I'm sorry.
Was charged with animal cruelty after a group of women told deputies he was abusing his English bulldog. Around 11:45 p.m. on August 6th, the woman saw the man kicking his dog in its side, according to a Walton County Sheriff's Office arrest report. The dog wasn't on a leash. The man, who was extremely intoxicated, tried to pick up his dog but dropped it, the report reads. Deputies asked him where the leash was, and he said not to worry. They insisted he was in no condition.
Fine.
They insisted he was in no condition to drive and offered to call him a cab. The man said he didn't need any help and that he was going back to his car with his dog. The deputies again told him he couldn't drive, and the man responded, F you, you're not taking my dog. The man grabbed the bulldog by the throat, picked it up, and almost fell over. The deputy asked him to put the dog down so he wouldn't injure it. F you, you're not taking my dog, the man said again to the lawman. Why are y'all harassing me?
Uh-huh.
He dragged the dog by the back of its neck toward the parking lot, stopped, and squared off at one of the deputies. The deputy pulled out his taser and warned him to back off. The man said, what, are you going to shoot me? F y'all. The man then grabbed the dog by its right front and rear left legs and jerked it off the ground. The dog tried to bite him, and the deputies demanded the man put the dog down. Each deputy grabbed one of the man's arms. They were between two parked cars while the man was on top of the dog. Then one of the deputies fired his taser at the man's chest. He was handcuffed and checked out by paramedics.
Awesome. They should have just, you know, here's the thing. They should have incapacitated him and then just given the dog a couple of free lunges. You know what I mean? You know, like if the cops...
Go ahead, get him. Take a few shots.
Yeah. I mean, look, seriously, if the cops come to your house, you know, because, you know, you're beating on somebody, you know, whoever it was that was bearing the brunt of your ire, they ought to get like two or three free shots. Just, you know, right as you're going on out the door. I mean, it seems like people would have a more favorable impression of law enforcement if there was some actual fairness meted out along with justice. It's just my estimation.
Well, the man was charged with resisting an officer without violence and public intoxication and first-degree animal cruelty.
And just for being a dick. F him. All right.
And being a dick.
I hope they tased him again, right in the junk later on. There's your taser watch for Monday.
You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it, bro.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't tase me, bro.
This might just be the soundbite where Ace is talking about wanting to become a plumber. So I mentioned the Tom Snyder interview with Kiss. And by the way, this is that, I love Kiss at all, but this is during the Dynasty era, which is bad because then it's like they were all wearing like these weird shades of lavender. And so it's really just a sad, sad, depressing period for the band, like in every conceivable. The only thing good that came out of this period was their cover of 2000 Men by the Stones. That's it. And that was, you know, that was Ace anyway. So if I have got this correct, this is some of the best sections from when Kiss was on the Snyder Show.
Tell me about your outfits. I mean, did you design your own outfits, all of you? And tell me what each outfit means. And I'll start with you, Ace.
Well, that means a cucumber.
I think this outfit is self-explanatory.
I mean, you know, this is part of a kind of a V shape.
And by the way, he's in, I mean, you all know what Kiss looks like, but I mean, even for Kiss, even by Kiss standards, they were gaudy looking in 79 because he had a huge, he has basically like a gigantic, like a cowl sort of a thing. He looks like one of the Watchmen, basically, and then he's covered with mirrors. And so he's wearing a huge lavender mirror-covered cowl that then is sort of like with shoulder pads, so it sticks way out, ending in a big lavender cape being draped behind. I mean, it's just it's retarded. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
This is my utility belt, and we don't want to go any belower than my waist area because that's reserved for concert players.
I understand that. But, and after it's all over, they say, this is what we came for.
And that's
what
I always feel short. I stole this from Flash Gordon, and, you know, I have my cape in.
But you're kind of like a spaceman, huh?
No, actually, I'm a plumber. On the side.
Hey, you're listen, I got a little piece of pipe backstage I'd like to have you work on.
Tell me about it. Oh, you wanted it, but I went bad.
I forgot about the little homoerotic rejoinder from Tom Snyder at the end.
You old sweet talk.
And then so that is the moment then where Ace has actually cracked himself up so much that he loses his balance and he sort of falls forward out of the chair. And, you know, which is sort of amusing and funny. It's whatever. And I guess if they had just sort of rolled with it, but they choose at that moment, probably for obvious reasons, to then cut to the reverse angle. And there's Gene and Paul. And Gene actually is doing the little thing where he's like kind of cracking his knuckles as though he's going to be giving him a good workover in the back room. It really is like it's gold. It is the most awkward like 16 minutes or whatever of an interview you'll ever see. It's really it's fantastic. Let's do one more here, and then what is happening next, Don Taylor, keeper of the schedule?
Then we will do. Let's see, what time is it?
It's two.
Then
something.
We will do my confidential to that guy, and then we will read a commercial and chat with Mr. Ryan White.
Excellent. All right. Here's one more from Don Taylor.
A man who agreed to save his brother's life by donating part of his liver died 4 days after the transplant procedure at the University of Colorado Hospital. It's the first death of a living liver donor in Colorado and only the fourth in the U.S. As Ryan was preparing to give part of his liver to his brother, Chad, he told CNN affiliate KWGN why.
You know, I love Chad. You know, he's my brother, and he's got a lot of life left to live. I'm healthy, and I know I'll stay healthy. I know I'm going to recover.
Wow, you say that loud enough, the universe hears you and decides to punish you.
Chad Arnold said that his brother made the ultimate sacrifice for him.
It's a story about a man who's deeply convicted by his faith. And because of that, what he did for me was just sort of a normal thing that he did for people.
Just FYI, if any of my family members are listening, I'm never donating anything. It doesn't matter. I need all of my parts, all of them. You know, even the redundant ones I need. I don't want anybody to have any illusions about that. I don't expect it. Especially because, I think that in some ways, I think the television has not done the job it's supposed to do. Because you get the feeling when you watch, especially like medical dramas, where they are supposed to, in some ways, a lot of them play into the sort of, you know, in the best way possible, I guess, in the sort of doctor as Godhead sort of a thing where, you know, they talk about there's a lot of glowing speeches about the sanctity of life and about the preservation of human dignity and about how, you know, life is worth living. And, you know, you've got to go out there and grab your existence with both hands and whatever it takes. And, you know, and they always have then the touching story about the transplant where somebody who doesn't want to donate or whatever. And then at the end, he finally looks into his sister's eyes and he realizes, by God, if I can't share the gift of. And then they just make it look like the most painful goddamn thing on earth, where they're having to, like, manacle you to a table as, you know, like the foreman guy from House just jams, like, a huge needle that's, like, 9 feet long into your spine and you scream. So that's really what they ought to do. If they wanted to make it a decent public service, they would just make it look much more pleasant. You know, they'd make it – or just offer some sort of a financial incentive. You know?
Whenever you donate something, you end up spending a day in the happiness chamber.
Is that what they call that? Is that the morphine drip?
Yeah.
Is that really what that
That's
is?
That's what I call it.
All right.
By the way, Mr. Egler asked that you raise the level of my microphone. And I'd
see.
Like that, too. But,
hold on a second. There we go. How about that? We'll try that.
Okay.
All right. Excellent.
Did you actually even move that?
No. All right.
I did.
I just – why would I say I was adjusting your microphone when I wasn't? Especially when, as we've just discovered, people can actually hear what I do. It's not like I'm saying I'm painting the wall fuchsia, knowing that nobody can really tell.
All right.
Yes, you hallucinated. yes, that. I was not actually adjusting that at all. All right. Are we prepared with the confidential to that guy?
We are indeed.
All right. So we'll do this. We'll do a new feature. It's Rick Emerson's confidential to that guy. Don Taylor has written, and we'll be reading this observation in just one moment. We'll come back. We'll talk to Ryan White here in just a bit. We'll do his top five brooding songs, and we'll get this Tila Tequila thing done. Talk about Madman. All of that is on the way. Are ye prepared, Don Taylor?
I have indeed.
All right. Without further ado, Don Taylor presents Confidential to That Guy.
Confidential to the guy outside Fred Meyer last night. It was about 6 p.m. and you were going shopping with your son. He's adorable, by the way. He looks to be about 5 years old and appears well-behaved. Well done there. I was walking about 8 feet behind you as you approached the entrance to the store. You slowed briefly on the sidewalk, turned your head to the right, and spit. You just spit on the ground. I had to walk around it. And given that you didn't seem to pause to think about it, I'm fairly sure that you didn't think twice before you did it. Like a lot of men, you believe that it's perfectly all right to just hawk up saliva and expel it on the street anywhere you see fit. I say like a lot of men because I never see women do this. Only men. Walking down the street, standing in line at food carts, leaning out car windows, just letting fly with a wad of mucus. Why do you do that? Why do you think that's okay? Listen, if you want to expel viscous bodily fluids in the privacy of your own home, feel free. Spit up in your own yard all you like. Blow out a few tablespoons of snot onto your kitchen floor for all I care. Hork up a throat oyster onto your sofa and rub it into the fabric with your elbow. That's none of my business. But when you're in public, how about you try doing what civilized people do when they have an excess of moisture in their mouths? Swallow it. That's it. Just swallow it. It's not a big deal. Oh, and guy in front of Fred Meyer, you had your kid with you. Hell of a way to be a role model. Sincerely, Don.
There we go. The inaugural installment of Confidential to That Guy, courtesy of Don Taylor. Go. Well done, Don. Rick Emerson heartily agrees with that.
Thank you.
All right, fantastic. Hey, let me ask you this. Is it true that this is just a thing that I'm... is this a thing that either A, I'm just making up, B, I am imagining, which is like making it up, but not quite the same thing, C, that I have heard discussed, D, that is in existence, F?
E.
Nah, I lost the thread. On Facebook, do they have the whole thing where they're making a button that just says, meh?
I don't think so.
Really?
I think they just finally came up with a dislike button.
Well, though, they've got the dislike button, but someone told me that they were going to, you know, and then I saw what purported to be, I mean, who knows, but I saw what purported to be the graphic for it. So I heard that they were going to be making a meh button, which would just be awesome.
That would be okay.
All right. I'm just, you know, and I'm you know, beware of feature creep, you know, on those sites, because then it just becomes a whole thing of bloatware. But I'm just, I don't even know what prompted that. I'm just saying, for my money, you could do worse than to have the meh button. I'm just making the observation. We talked earlier about Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution. I will give you that number. It's 971-533-3211. I actually got an email from somebody over the weekend. It was a woman named Julie, and Julie emailed me, and she said that she actually, she had written it down. She'd done exactly, see, here's the thing. This is what happens when you follow the advice of Rick Emerson, is your life becomes better in ways that are not even explicable with the human tongue. They have to be felt inside, like the Holy Eucharist. Ways beyond imagine, ways beyond calculation, beyond measure, your existence will improve in every conceivable way in ways that your brain cannot quite fathom. And so in this particular instance, she had taken my advice to write down the number for the cleaning solution, which is, by the way, 971-533-3211. Now, here's the thing. When she wrote it down, she had no way of knowing when she would need it. She only knew that that day would eventually come. And come, that day did. When she had, I don't know, it was like one of her kids attracted mud or something into the house. And that's a thing, you know, doesn't seem like a huge deal until you catch it too late. The mud has already dried. Half of it is already, like, sunk into the carpet, which means you're going to get then the weird mildewy smell when the water just kind of, you know, goes bad down there mixing with whatever, you know, 15 pounds of bong resin left by the last guy who lived in the house, you know, and 10 pounds of toenails from 1970. So, I mean, God only knows what's in the carpet. I mean, it's just filled with evil and filth and cat hair. So, but the point is, she didn't have to sit and think, oh, my lord, whatever shall I do? And then rend her garment over how she was going to get the carpet cleaned. You know why? Because she'd listened to Rick Emerson. Not just figuratively, but literally. And she'd actually written down the number. She went to the fridge. Bam. She called the number, 971-533-3211. The cleaning solution, Michael Beatty, that is his business, local business. He buys all the supplies, equipment, chemicals, accessories, all that stuff from Portland whenever he can. And, of course, he keeps his money here by advertising on this very fine radio program. And he does not just carpets, but, you know, anything like that your feet are going to touch. You're going to be tracking stuff in from the outside. You're going to be spilling something on. You don't really spill anything on the ceiling. It doesn't really happen that way. You spill things on the ground, you know, upholstery, stone, marble tile, whatever. So you give them a call or write down this number for the time that you will need it. 971-533-3211. Residential and commercial. They do cleaning and regular maintenance programs to keep it looking fantastic once it's there. 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty, the cleaning solution. So we're here with Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian. So you were talking about the Lady Gaga thing. You ran the article in there.
Yes.
People who were peeved by that in some way. What else is going on in the world of musical amusements?
Oh, we've got this. The big thing this week is the first Portland Folk Festival, which I don't know. I kind of think every night around here is kind of like the Portland Folk Festival.
That doesn't really seem
necessary.
We have
a lot of acoustic guitars in this town. But they're doing the Portland Folk Festival this weekend, and there are some pretty cool shows that'll be in Thursday's paper, and otherwise a bunch of blog stuff. We'll talk about the new Mellencamp record tomorrow on the blog.
So I don't know if we can discuss that just a little bit. I don't want to give the whole game away.
Totally.
The people should obviously be going, and they should be reading it at oregonlive.com/music or in print in the Oregonian. You had mentioned this, actually. This is one of those things. Sometimes people will mention, hey, there's a great record coming out, or I heard a great track from whatever, and you'll go, yeah, I got to check that out, and then you just forget about it. You know, it falls out of your head 5 minutes later, you know, because there's only so much stuff you can keep track of.
Exactly.
A couple of recommendations that you have, things you've talked about recently that I have either kept track of or that I've gone and actually purchased. I got that Shel Silverstein, the tribute to Shel Silverstein, which is awesome,
by the
way.
Isn't it phenomenal?
It is, and I don't really know what I was expecting. It's one of those things where sometimes with tribute records, it's not like I have a problem with tribute records. I actually think they're really great because in some ways it's like the best of both worlds. And especially if you get something that is really sublime. Like there was one of the like 5,000 Leonard Cohen tribute records that came out had something really great, which was REM covering First We Take Manhattan. And I remember hearing that, and it was just a long time ago, 15 years ago maybe, and just thinking, like, now this is how it ought to be done. There was the Zevon thing. It was the Enjoy Every Sandwich that I liked quite a lot. Sometimes not so good. The Silverstein thing is great, man.
The matching of artist with song on that is so good, where you got, like, Prine doing this old guitar. Christofferson doing the Winner is just the perfect voice.
It's beautiful.
For doing that song.
And I'm not much of an Andrew Bird guy. It's not like I'm opposed to him. I just don't really know much about him. It's, you know, there's one of those things where I just...
He whistles very well.
And you know, and he's one of
my nemesis, actually.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's the one that if my wife could leave me for anybody, she'd leave me for Andrew Bird.
I can totally see that. Don't get me wrong. I just mean in general, in some overarching sense. Well, because he's like a good looking guy, and he plays like 1,000 instruments.
Loops them, and he does
the whole that thing of like the on stage juggling of the various and he sort of changes the melodies and the arrangements on the fly, and his songs are all very pretty, but they're all very technically accomplished, which means that he has the sort of, you know, the guy appeal and the chick appeal down at the same time. He was in the Squirrel Nut Zippers, but turned his back on the world of, you know, commercialism to pursue art. Also,
and when he whistles, you will turn over your women and your money to him.
And you know what Andrew Bird does as well? He does the, it's not even like a na-na, hey-hey thing. It's more of just a sort of, like a lilting sort of a la-la-la that can easily become repetitive, but doesn't with him. Anyway, that song is really beautiful. He does a Twistable Turnable Man.
Twistable Turnable Man, which is the only song on there that was never actually a song, that was actually a poem.
So that's an original melody, too.
Yeah.
F him. See, and I'm with you. It's just, you know, it's one of those guys where it's like he's got more talent in like his fingernail shavings than I will ever have in my entire life. Also, Black Francis, or is he?
Yes.
Is he Frank Black on this? I don't know.
I think he's Black Francis on that one.
We does Cover the Rolling Stone.
Yep.
Which is one of the songs that I got burned out on a long time ago, but it's a great version. Anyway, so you recommended that, and then you've been talking about this Mellencamp record that was produced by...
T-Bone Burnett, who anything that sounds like it was recorded prior to 1930 these days seems to be produced by T-Bone Burnett. He's and this one is, you know, when we talked about this originally, you and I are of the same mind that, you know, a guy like John Mellencamp doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have to push himself really in any way.
Right.
And what they did is they went to one of the first Baptist churches in America down in, I believe, Atlanta. They went to the Original Sun Studios and they went to a hotel room. I think in Mississippi where Robert Johnson recorded, and he recorded in a hotel room.
That is awesome.
Facing a corner with his producer set up in the adjacent hotel room. So T-Bone Burnett set up in the adjacent hotel room, and John Mellencamp, you know, faced the wall that Robert Johnson faced, and they wrote these songs in like 13 days with a small band, and they went and recorded this just really classic, old, you know, sounding, really pretty record.
See, and that's the sort of, I could just sit and just nerd about this all day. And there's no one to stop me. That is the sort of thing that can easily become really gimmicky, you know, where you say, like, look, you're going to write a song a day for 9 days, and then, you know, and that's, because sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it just becomes like a shill,
yeah.
You know, it becomes like a gimmick to either sell the records, you have a story to tell, or it becomes a way to motivate a band that has just gotten fat and lazy and can't write anything anymore.
Yeah.
But Mellencamp is a guy who is just so innately talented and who clearly has such a deep and abiding respect, for what I guess we're now obliged to call roots music or Americana or whatever. But, you know, but especially these Southern inflected styles, you know, from the early 20th
yeah.
century. And I mean that, and T-Bone Burnett is the same way. And so, how do I put this? Does it sound like a Mellencamp record, or does it sound like he is trying to do a different kind of thing?
It sounds like John Mellencamp pushing himself. They record it, on top of everything else, they recorded it in mono. It sounds like Mellencamp, but it sounds like, you know, later era Mellencamp. It doesn't sound like Mellencamp trying to rewrite Jack and Diane
or anything like that.
It sounds like a man his age trying to push himself as a writer and, you know, do something different.
Excellent.
Which is, you know, and it can go two ways. With, you know, T-Bone did the new Willie Nelson record, which sounded just like a Willie Nelson record. But he did the new Robert Randolph record, too, where Robert Randolph plays 15-string pedal steel, which is a traditionally just a church instrument, and he rocks it out and does blues. And what they did is they brought in all this old, you know, all these old field recordings of this old black music that he knew nothing about, like the blues and stuff, and they just started looping them. And he and a band would start jamming to these old recordings and come up with all new songs. And at one point, like, he couldn't get a verse, and he called Ben Harper, and Ben Harper just shows up and finishes the song for him, because you can do that when you've...
Jesus.
When you're him.
Well, that's... So. You know, and it's like... yeah, all right. I was going to say, it must be really cool to be a rock star, which just sounds, that is the sort of thing that I want to say and that I have to, or what is it, won't? Are you saying it's won't? The want is pronounced
yeah,
won't?
Won't to say, W-O-N-T.
Whatever. Want.
Is it pronounced want?
I think it's pronounced
I always
want.
Heard it's want. That's how I've always said it. And
maybe you're right.
I think that I believe that I say it want because I believe that Rush Limbaugh says it want. And I believe, and I'm almost certain, and I mean, I knew the word before that, but I think that is one of my... not so inadvertent steals, probably from Rush, where he says, and now is my want. No, it's from G. Gordon Liddy. It's not even from Rush Limbaugh. It is from, I got it from G. Gordon Liddy. So I inherently, I believe it to be true to the core of my being, because that's not a guy who misuses the English language in any way. What was my point? But you hear those stories about a guy who will just, you know, the fraternity of musicians at a certain level, either in terms of success or in terms of skill, where they can just call up, you know, like when Paul McCartney was doing, Run Devil Run, I think, or whatever, mm-hmm. and he just called David Gilmour, and he's like, hey, I got this guitar part. Yeah, what do you think? He's like, okay, give me 10 minutes or whatever. And he just comes over and he knocks out, you know, a bunch of the guitar parts for the record. And that, again, is the sort of thing that in the wrong hands can be really corny, where
right.
it's just like a cavalcade of guest stars. But sometimes if you've got the right guy for the right part and the right song, it really is just amazing. And if you have the ability to do it. And right now, here's just the thing. I can't hear what's going on, and in fact, I'm not even breaking eye contact with Ryan, but out of my peripheral vision, Dawn is doing what I am almost certainly sure is going to Merriam-Webster.com online and listening to the computer pronounce the word for her, only to find out that she is wrong. Dawn?
Yes, I am wrong,
there you
apparently.
Go. All right, that's fantastic. You know, and so anyway, so I love stuff like that. Let me ask you this. You're, you're just such a huge, music fan and just a guy who is not a stranger to long conversations about sort of the musical version of fantasy football,
yes.
You know, where you talk about the, you know, the bands and you know, what they ought to have done. I have two questions for you, and I don't want you to think about the answer. I don't want you to ponder it. You just give me your gut response, and I'm going to ask Dawn the same two questions. So I will give you the question, then Dawn, and then we'll go to the second question. Ryan White, and I trust that you will understand what I mean and what I don't mean by this question. If there was a band that just for the sake of legend should have perished at some point in their career, some point early on, then perhaps, who would it have been and when?
Ooh.
I mean, you might. I'm not saying you wish the band wasn't here, but I'm saying just in terms of the actual iconic aspect of it, a band that should have perished at a certain point in their career, who would it have been and at what point would they have perished? You know, where the band goes right into Lake Michigan, you know, into Lake Michigan or whatever.
Metallica pre-Napster.
All right. Post-Black thing. Album, perhaps, pre-Napster.
Maybe the rest of Leonard Skinnerd.
on a second plane trip. Hold on. You stay right here. Don't move. We're going to come back. We're going to second
I was
plane.
I was looking at video, or not video, but a still photo with a, photos with a story the other day of Skinnerd playing the Sean Hannity Freedom concert or whatever.
Man.
And
no,
it was...
Can I just say, I was an AOR DJ. I was at a what was basically a classic rock station in 92, maybe 91. And we were playing, you know, the, quote, new Leonard Skinnerd records there. And they seemed old and irrelevant then. And don't get me wrong, I love Leonard Skinnerd. I really do. But I love Leonard Skinnerd, you know. And, it, you know, that's, you know... That the thing that sort of the Mary Shelley creation that's been kind of lumbering around, you know, with their left arm or whatever for the last 20 years is now Leonard Skinnerd.
Can we pick individuals here?
Yes.
Sting.
All right. When?
Whenever the very last Police record that was any good was finished being recorded and before he ever started playing lute or talking about tantric sex or putting out albums with entire symphonies.
Okay, fair enough. Don Taylor, for the sake of legend, what band should have perished at an earlier point in their career and when?
I would say Pearl Jam after 10 and maybe the Rolling Stones after Exile on Main Street.
I could see that. Or maybe see for me, I always something with a band like the Stones. You always maybe to go to like the first. I mean, with the Stones, it's like a thousand. But maybe like the big major comeback, you know. So they go out, you know. So they go out having had like the you know the comeback, which is very rare, which is hard to find. It'd be like Aerosmith.
And then you say,
going
oh, how tragic they're all dead.
I wanted to say Aerosmith, but
after Pump. Maybe.
Yeah, after Pump. But I liked you know Permanent Vacation and Pump, and you know now it's like you know Steven Tyler talking about going on American Idol, which I think is kind of perfect because he knows a lot about people singing in Home Depot.
Yeah, I saw an interview with him actually where he and this was like I was still living in Washington. This would have been like 95 maybe. This would have been like when Get a Grip came out. And to his credit though, he actually said because the guy from Rolling Stone said, "Well, people say that you're in danger of turning into a caricature of yourself, like Chuck Berry." And Tyler actually said, "I wish I had the actual interview so I could quote it." But he said, "He goes, well, you know, I thought about that." And, you know, I was worried about that for a while, and he thought, F it, you know? Why shouldn't I become a character myself? I mean...
F it, I'm going to use my nipples as album art.
And he's like, nobody else is allowed to do it. I'm Steven Tyler. I'm going to do it. And he said, if I can live long enough to be the guy who's singing Walk This Way, like, on the space station, he's like, caricature or not, he's like, if I... What he basically said is...
Walk this way with a walker.
He said, limp this way. Roll this way with an asthmatic wheeze. He said, if I am lucky enough to be Steven Tyler, he's like, why would I not milk that for every year of my life that I possibly could? And it's like, I can't really find fault with that formula. You know, I can't really argue with that. For me, with the early perishing of the band, I'm saying Guns N' Roses, after Lies is recorded and finished and mixed and mastered, but before it's released. Because then they go out on the controversial, menacing note with the whole One in a Million scandal, but then it's married to the... They went too soon. They had so much more to give. He was a troubled young man from, you know, from Bloomington or whatever.
Well, this is, I mean, when you know, we were playing Used to Love Her a while ago, we were talking about how much more fulfilling it would be these days to see a Guns N' Roses tribute band than actually see Guns N' Roses.
Have you seen any of their sort of alleged, you know, any of the sort of fake Guns N' Roses
no,
that Axl has done?
I've missed them all.
I saw this, the Spaghetti Incident, but it was before Chinese Democracy came out. It was like 2 years ago. But even then, it was absurd. Even it was weird because even then, it felt dated. And how do I put this? Axel came out and he had like the weird cowboy hat, dreadlock, way too much, you know, shiny face thing going on. But then all the tapestries behind him, all the decoration was Chinese democracy stuff. So it was like it said Guns N' Roses, but in that lettering, it was like, you know, it was Arabic lettering, it was the English lettering, but it was meant to look like the sort of Chinese characters. And the album hadn't even come out, wouldn't at that point come out for another year and a half, and it still felt dated. It was the weirdest, strangest. And the night before at, I think, what was then called Outlaws, which is now, is that Bossa Nova or is it something else? Has that become a different thing? The night before that, I actually saw Appetite for Deception, who are a Guns N' Roses band with my friend Andrew as the drummer. And they were so much better. I mean, they're a great band to begin with. I mean, it's a couple of the guys from Emerson Starship who are in that. And so it's like they're just amazing, talented players. So, I mean, they're good playing anything. But, I mean, they were scorchingly good. And then the next night I'm there in the Rose Garden watching, you know, the sort of Guns N' Roses Incorporated lurch around the stage. And we didn't even say anything. So my friend Sneathan and I went, and we just packed it up before they even left the stage. We didn't even stay for the encore. We knew the set list. And I wanted to hear Paradise City, but, you know, not that much.
Yeah.
Could I nominate for a tragic early death Red Hot Chili Peppers before they ever recorded anything?
In the womb? Can I ask for a smothering in the crib? Yes, yes, you're good. Only if I can say the same thing for Steely Dan. You know, I have always said if I could go back and just abort with extreme prejudice one band, that'd be Steely Dan right there. And you know what? And the world would be a better place for it.
I like Steely
Dan. And then that's fine. You know what? A lot of people do. And it's a big world. I have gotten past the sort of Nick Hornby, what he calls music rage. I have gotten past the point of my life. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm older, or maybe it's because, like, it just takes too much energy, or maybe it's because...
maybe you're kinder. You've become a kinder Rick Emerson.
That's almost certainly not true. I think if you do random...
I've noticed lately you've been genuinely kind on occasion.
You accused me at the beginning of this program of playing something for the sole purpose of ridiculing the fact that you cried earlier. So you are either lying then or lying now.
I said kinder.
All right. Well, relatively speaking.
I said you did a couple of kind things.
I think a random sampling of people who interact with me would tell you that's not true. But I think it's just I've realized that, like, I just don't care what people think about my music taste. And I got to that point, I don't know, maybe around when I was like 25 or so. I got to the point where I stopped using the phrase guilty pleasures. You know, like I used to say, well, I like Bon Jovi. It's a guilty pleasure. But now it's like, you know, I like Bon Jovi. You don't like it, you can just suck it.
I think it was Chuck Klosterman who wrote a really good piece about the phrase guilty pleasure. Like, doing heroin with a child prostitute would be a guilty pleasure. Music is not such a thing.
Like, I've had this discussion with other film critics a lot, and it's basically most film critics have come to just loathe the phrase guilty pleasure because there really is no such thing. Either you like something or you don't like something. And if you like something, you should be able to defend liking it.
Yeah.
That's my whole thing. That's my thing with, like, I'll talk about Poison or the Osmonds or something. And I'll be like, you know, a good song is a good song. Then, you know, whatever. You got to leave. But the weird thing is, though, it's like a strange sort of Zen koan thing. When I quit getting angry, when I stopped angrily defending my own music taste, when I'd say, I like, and then I would insert, whatever the band is, and somebody would say, oh, they suck, they're terrible. And I'd be like, well, you know, that's your problem, friend, and not mine. So whatever. At that point, the strangest thing happened is that I quit being angry about other people's music taste. So I no longer have those sort of, those big fights about it. So like with Steely Dan, you know, there's many people who are into that band. Every radio engineer on Earth, for example, I'm just not one of them.
We have a comment from the text box. When someone mentions in a similar vein his feelings about his or her, as the case may be, about Steve Miller, and says, "I'd like to live in a world where Take the Money and Run and the Joker never existed."
See, I can get with the whole that they're overplayed thing, but I don't know how anybody can actively dislike Steve Miller. I mean, maybe not care for. Not your cup of tea, but it's like, what could Steve Miller possibly do? He seems like
seems
most
pretty innocuous.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, that's like getting angry at like Formica.
I saw the Steve Miller Band open a show for The Who.
Really?
Yeah.
See, the Steve Miller has created a handful of rock and roll classics. Seems like a decent guy, a hardworking guy, continues to release new music. People don't really buy it, but he does it, which almost counts more in my book. Whatever. I'm just saying that to me is like not even angry. It's just sort of mystifying. It's like, how can you get that worked up one way or the other about Steve. It's like being really angry about Steve Winwood or something. You know, it's like who cares? I mean, like him, don't like him. It doesn't really matter. All right, my second question, and we got to do probably something. Hold on, I found my copy of the run sheet. My God.
We're over on getting to the top five, but we're doing pretty good.
Well, here's the thing: we're not over in a relative sense. You know, everything is happening in the proper order and spaced out properly, I guess, if you were to sort of zoom out and look at it from a distance. My second question is,
I have no idea what that means.
It all makes sense.
If you Google
in my
Earth
head,
this conversation,
yes, that's what I'm saying. It all makes sense in my brain. So what we'll do is I'm going to ask one final question. We will take a little break. I'll do the cleaning solution thing. We'll come back. We'll do the top five, and we'll all continue. Isn't that right? Isn't that looking at here? Cleaning solution thing next. Yes.
Okay. You didn't already do the cleaning solution thing?
No, I did the. Did I do the cleaning solution. I thought
solution.
I just did the billboard.
Did I do the actual thing? You did the actual thing. Remember the.
This is why
it was right
Dawn
after she was talking about hawking up loogies on a couch, which would also be good for the cleaning solution.
I thought that was yesterday.
No,
all right.
Fine. This happened. I wrote it on the traffic log.
Here's the great thing.
You did it at 2:33.
You know, the wonderful thing is that I'm now so much further ahead than I thought I was. I am way more productive even than I give myself credit for.
It was 20 minutes ago. You can't be expected to remember something that far back.
No. Brain like a kidney bean. So my second music-based question is this. If there is someone a musician that you could pick to match with the producer of your choice for the sole purpose of giving them the comeback they so deserve and that they ought to have. So the sort of Johnny Cash-esque comeback, you know what I'm talking about? Because a guy who maybe people don't appreciate him, or he just makes terrible records because he didn't know any better and there's nobody there to say, friend, you're doing it wrong. Or a guy who you're – here's the other thing sometimes. A guy that you really love and you are desperately afraid he's going to die without having made another good record. And they're going to go, oh, yeah, the guy that made 15 years of terrible music. Who would that be? Ryan White from The Oregonian?
Does this matter if they're dead already?
No. I mean, for the purposes of this conversation, you are allowed to pick a dead guy.
I always wish Warren Zevon had better producers.
Yes, I was actually thinking of Warren Zevon when I said the thing about making 15 years of terrible records, because he did that whole doing it all himself on a keyboard, on a synthesizer thing, which is bad.
I mean, if you could have gotten him with a guy like T-Bone or a guy like Rick Rubin or, you know, anybody who could have just lent a hand, because there were so many great ideas and so many great songs that were just not done as well.
Great material, you know? Bad arrangement, bad production.
People talk a lot about Townes Van Zandt the same way. He just never had good production. You know, when he would get a producer, they would like fill a record with horns
and
stuff like that. And that's just not a man who should have horns on a record.
Yeah, and he was obviously, for many reasons, in no position to tell them, do it different.
He was largely in a position where if anybody was willing to give him a little bit of money to record a song, he had to record it because he didn't have any money.
And Zevon was just one. And Zevon was the sort of – he had the George Lucas syndrome of he was just such a dick. And I love Warren Zevon, but he was so antisocial.
Oh, God, that book.
Yeah, and his whole thing – if you read it, I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, where you just I think got along so poorly with people that he was like, F it, I'll do it all myself in the studio with this magical keyboard. And I don't have anything against synthesizers or keyboards. I don't have like some prejudice against, quote, real instruments versus fake instruments, whatever. But it's like you need other people there. You need a push and a pull and a dynamic. And you can't just sit in a room and do it all yourself, or it just sucks. And you listen to like Mutineer, an album like Mutineer, which has, I think, some really great material on it that is done badly. Or Mr. Bad Example. Some great songs on there, and a couple that are done well, but most that could be done much better.
The reason that is, you know, the most success he had was when he was early working with really good musicians and Jackson Browne producing them.
And he would do that, and then afterward he'd be like, F you, I'm not working with you again, and it would always be to his detriment. Dawn Taylor.
I don't know. I'm sitting here trying to think about that, and it's really hard because, I don't know, because we were talking earlier about the whole Americana thing. It's like Tom Jones has this great blues-based album now, and then Mellencamp just did this. I'd love to see like Dave Alvin get back together with somebody like Billy Zoom from X, who I guess has become just sort of a minister or something in Southern California, actually, but he does give guitar lessons. But, you know, some of those guys, and actually bring him back and kind of update their sound from the early 80s and do something new.
What do you guys think about bands who go back and they record updated versions of old songs, especially like maybe demos or stuff that they did when they were, you know, before they broke or before they had a deal?
I guess if you're finishing off a demo or something, fine. But, I mean, that last Everclear record where they just re-recorded old Everclear songs, yeah. I don't know why you would do that or why I would want to listen to it. Just because you've got people playing them?
It's kind of the musical sort of thing as Gus Van Sant remaking Psycho,
right.
You know, shot for shot. It's like, okay, I'm sure that was interesting for you to do. But I don't know why I would want to actually.
Except
sit
it's even
it
worse because it would be like Hitchcock remaking Psycho,
right,
shot
right,
for
yeah.
shot.
Right.
But with reggae.
All right. Let's do this. We'll do this. Let me do this Tila Tequila thing here because I gotta get to this. And then here's what we'll do. I'll do this Tequila Tequila. Do this Tila Tequila thing.
Would you say that again, please?
Do this Tila Tequila. No, see, I can't. We'll do this thing with Tila Tequila. Then. Now it's a quest. We'll do the Tila Tequila thing, you bastards. Then we must do this. We will do a brief recap of last night's Mad Men. A few thoughts on mm-hmm. that. Do the top five. We got at least one other watch we got to do, and then so forth.
Fortunately, nobody's hovering around waiting for us to finish. So
all right, awesome. All right, so yeah, that's the thing is Greg and Sarah are gone this week, so they're on vacation. They preloaded, so it's like I'm a man without constraints or restraints or one of those things. So this is your sort of an ad hoc clown watch, I guess, because there's some debate about whether the Insane Clown Posse counts as clowns. So we'll just but we'll do this anyway, just for the sake of the bed. Now, many of you may have heard sections of this story. And Don, have you read the entire thing? I mean, do you know the gist?
I know the gist.
It really is good. The story is great in and of itself because it's got all the elements of a story. It's got clowns, it's got Tila Tequila, and then it's got people harming her physically.
That's the best part.
It really does.
It has feces.
Is there feces, really?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I must have missed the feces.
That's one of the best parts of the story.
Excellent. And then it's
got. It also has a wrestler, we learned this morning.
And then it's got message board comments afterward. So I'm just going to read this to you. This is improbably enough from CNN. This is by Alan Duke of CNN. Headline is Tila Tequila suffers cuts but escapes Juggalo's attack. It sounds like an Onion headline. I know people say that a lot about things, but I mean, if you just picked up the Onion tomorrow and it said. And it said something like, Dan Rather escapes a savage beating at the hands of the Juggalos. I'm Doyle Redland. You'd be like, that's a great Onion story. Have you read this? But it's real, apparently. I mean, it's just, I don't understand this world of ours. It really is, it's sometimes that, like, parody cannot keep up. Reality TV, quote, star, end quote, Tila Tequila suffered. It's like I want to ring a bell every time something glorious happens. It warms the cockles of my heart, and then everybody drinks. Suffered facial cuts. That'd be the first bell right there. When she was pelted with rocks and bought, really?
Yeah.
Is that her?
That's a picture. She took a picture of her facial cuts.
Did she tweet that to everyone?
And she posted them online so people could see that she had bruises and facial cuts.
God bless you, Tila Tequila. She didn't have a tampon stringing hang out on that one, does she? Because every photo
this is just from the shoulders up, so I'm sure that
it's one of those things where like every third thing that she puts on Twitter, it seems like she's got to have some delicate removal instrument hanging out of her area. Let's see. All right, verifying something here. All right, excellent. Okay, so there's the facial injury. Reality TV star Tila Tequila suffered facial cuts when she was pelted with rocks and bottles while performing at a music festival in Illinois early Saturday, according to a witness and law enforcement official. She's pretty cut up, said a performer who saw the violence at the Gathering of the Juggalos in rural Hardin County, Illinois. Like, I think it goes without saying that it's in a rural area, not in one of the tonier sections of town. The witness, this is the best phrase in the entire article. This, forget the fact that she was, like, pelted and beaten and that there's feces and clowns. And that she took her top off, and I think that actually encouraged them to beat her more. This is the best phrase in the article because it said straight-facedly, and you know that it's meant with sincerity, but it's fundamentally absurd in ways I cannot even begin to express. She's pretty cut up, said a performer who saw violence at the Gathering of the Juggalos in rural Hardin County, Illinois. The witness asked not to be identified, so that he does not anger the Juggalos. Tequila, a Playboy model who also sings. It's interesting that they choose to phrase it that way. That's not me who said that. That's CNN.
It sings in quotes?
No, it
because I've seen the video and she wasn't singing.
It posted a Twitter message Saturday saying she would sue the festival, which is organized for fans of the hip-hop group Insane Clown Posse. Pretty soon, the owners who run the Juggalos will be bankrupt, she tweeted.
They're going to lose all five cases of Faygo they own.
And it's also interesting that CNN has adopted tweet as an actual verb. And that it's not capitalized. Okay, somebody is going to get a talking to from the AP Stylebook editor about that. The fans are mostly young people who sometimes wear clown makeup and are referred to as Juggalos and Juggalettes. Festival organizers did not immediately respond to requests for response. The performers and a mob of hundreds chased tequila from the stage. I want you now to picture. I wish I had happy music. Hold on. Where's our happy music here? Let's see if I can just find a... the happy music I was playing earlier probably doesn't work. Let's see if I can just... we'll just do a little bit of this. Let's see if this works.
The video on YouTube of her being pelted with rocks seems to have disappeared.
Really?
TMZ had it from like four or five different angles earlier.
Hold on. Let me see if I've got the... No. Let's see. Where was the scary...
Yeah, there we go.
This almost works. Or maybe this. Hold on, I could try this one. Hold on, let me see if I can just... No. What is the appropriate bed to be playing here? Hold on, how about... This one almost works. The performer said a mob of hundreds chased tequila from the stage and surrounded the trailer where she sought refuge. They rocked the trailer and smashed its windows, the witness said. Tequila eventually escaped, but only after the windows in her SUV were smashed. Hardin County Sheriff Tom Siner, who offered a similar description of events, said he has an open investigation. It would be, quote, very hard to identify the attackers, he said. Unless he can locate video of the incident. Now, have you not seen the video, Don?
No, I haven't.
All the videos, it's awesome. Tequila offered her description of events in a statement to celebrity news website TMZ. Quote, I went on stage and immediately before I even got on stage, this is her word-for-word quote, dudes were throwing huge stone rocks in my face. Not just any rocks, stone rocks.
Huge. Ostensibly, they are also throwing feces at her.
Awesome. Beer bottles that slit my eye open. They almost burnt my hair because they threw firecrackers on stage. The witness, who was standing in the rear of the stage, said the crowd of 2,000 was immediately angry toward Tequila, and she was unable to win them over.
Apparently, according to other stories, halfway through it, she was standing behind security guards trying to use them as a human shield to protect her from rocks and feces. And the reason that she took her top off and flashed her breasts is she was actually trying to pacify the crowd by showing her breasts. And that is what did not work.
The rocks and bottles, Don, flew harder and faster when Tequila bared her breasts. She took her top off, and they got really violent, he said. Tequila continued to perform even after her face started bleeding. She was holding a towel to her head, blood pouring down her face. It was really scary, Tequila said. This was not the only violent incident at the festival early Saturday. A 49-year-old Georgia man was arrested for allegedly stabbing another man in the abdomen. So,
what is not in that story is that in the middle of that, Tom Green came out on stage and tried to pacify the crowd by doing the running man, which you can see on the video.
Tom Green also would just make me throw more feces.
TMZ had a quote this morning from a former WWE wrestler who was there performing at the Gathering of the Juggalos, yes. And his name was Colt Cabana. And when you go to his Twitter page, it includes a photo of him. Yeah.
Looks like he's
straddling a mascot.
He's humping some kind of a big green mascot in the ring.
Oh, that is awesome.
That's his Twitter page. Dr. Colt Cabana.
Also at the Gathering of the Juggalos, Gallagher.
Oh, really?
Yes, also there this year.
I mean, you know,
well,
but
how could you not be angered by that?
In a weird way, it makes sense.
It was like somebody got a copy of the Z-List when they were booking this thing and said, nope, can't afford them. Who else you got?
I think you could get a gathering of any people anywhere, and if you gave them Tom Green, Tila Tequila, and Gallagher, they would become enraged.
Yeah,
a couple of people on Twitter yesterday I saw noted that this is probably the Juggalo Altamont.
Well, you know, the thing about the whole Juggalo festival they have or whatever every year is that, like, Something like this happens every year. That's the deal. It's you know, it's like I said about the Soapbox Derby. Every year, I expect them to say, well, this is the last year. You're not coming back again. Because every, like, you know, this year there's some dickweed skateboarder who is skating down the hill. And, of course, they tell, there's big signs saying, like, stay off the track, you know. And there's huge, like, red and yellow, and there's cops, and there's, like, police. This is, like, stay off the course, and there's ambulances everywhere, which should give you a clue of what might happen. But there's, you know, some dick skating down the hill. And the guy's like, get off the truck. And he disregards. And it was so deeply satisfying, though. He skated down the hill, and he coming by us. You know, and there's going to be, like, big things that weigh hundreds of pounds coming down at, like, 60 miles an hour. Skateboarders coming down the hill. And the guy says, like, get off the track. It's dangerous. And the skateboarder just sort of does the whole, yeah, and waves him away. And then about 15 feet later, bam, right off the skateboard, and just ground himself down like a pencil eraser. It was awesome. They had to, the ambulance had to come, and they had to load the guy. It was just so deeply gratifying. It was like an instant karma sort of. It was like the Monty Python foot coming right out of the heavens. But every year I expect him to say, like, okay, you know what? We're not going to let people be blind drunk on vodka going downhill at 60 miles an hour on roads lined with children in a thing they built in their garage while drunk. But they don't. And so every year the Juggalo thing, some guy gets stabbed, somebody gets, oh, I don't know, feces or stone rocks thrown at them.
Stone rocks.
And it's just, you know, and then they keep doing it. And I will say this before I read the message board comments. One of the great disappointments of my life, and it's not actually, the disappointment I'm referring to is not actually working at KUFO as such. But you remember at KUFO we did the whole Survive It and Drive It thing where there's the women who are living in the filth truck. One of the great disappointments of my existence and of one of the real big downers of my time at KUFO is that we came very, and I am not making this up, we came very close to having the Insane Clown Posse present in that parking lot in Vancouver to put like a bunch of, to perform with like, to put their monitor speakers like against the window of the truck and to do like a mini performance like 5 feet away from those girls until they snapped. Because they were in town and Chris Paddock, the PD, like knew their road manager or something. And we were going back and forth. We were like, look, what, and they were, you know, doing that thing where you try to grease them, you know, like, look, what if we play your single like a few times, like late at night, you know, like not a lot, but just enough to, what if we give some tickets away or something? And we came like this close to having the Insane Clown Posse there in the parking lot in Vancouver. Think of how perfect an American this would... You were talking about how it's done, that it's perfect that there's Gallagher and a wrestler. Think of how perfect it would have been to have the Insane Clown Posse serenading some girls in a truck filled with garbage in Vancouver in a parking lot. I mean, it would have been like...
Well, I remember we were trying to think of things that would, like, you know, drive them mad and drive them... And my suggestion was to just surround the car with clowns.
Yeah.
Obviously, you took
but
that...
But these would be insane clowns.
Insane
from a
clown
posse.
Even better.
So I am really disappointed that I... Because I'm telling you right now, don't think Rick Emerson's a snob. I would have eaten that up. You tell me if we couldn't get the Insane Clown Posse there, I'd still be there taking photos with them. And that would have been awesome.
Well, at 11:25 a.m., by the way, on her Twitter, Tila Tequila did say, go to TMC.com. Violence against women like myself or anyone for that matter is not okay, she said. So
well, that's her
take
story.
It from Tila Tequila.
Violence is bad.
I'm
and
sure
now
that,
you know.
I'm sure that battered women everywhere appreciate the alliance with Tila Tequila.
Violence against women like herself or anyone for that matter.
Uh-huh. So blah, 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 Insane Clown Posse. I have to say, just before I read these comments, though, I really do kind of dig those guys because they are, it's not like I'm a fan or whatever, but you got to admire those guys who have really made something. I mean, something. I don't think people really appreciate how much money that organization makes. And it is effectively just run by those two guys and their manager. I mean, that is, you know, and there was that controversy back in, I think, the mid-90s where they were on Hollywood Records and then they got dumped before the record ever came out. And so they got a little bit of scandal to start their career. But, you know, it's not like anybody's playing their videos or there's a radio station anywhere at all playing their music. They are, in almost every way, Insane Clown Posse, which is now, you think about it, they have record labels. They have multiple bands underneath them, you know, artists underneath them that they put out on their own label. They have made multiple films. They tour. They have a goddamn convention with like 20,000 people every year. And that effectively has sprung from nowhere. I mean, that is like a grassroots phenomenon, whatever people want to say about it.
When I lived in Portland, in North Portland, there was a house about a block away from me that I drove by every once in a while that was a bunch of Juggalo kids living there. They'd often be hanging out on their
it's
front porch.
Bill Cosby's new cartoon. They'd be hey, kids, it's Juggalo time!
They'd be hanging out on the front porch, though.
I got some feces.
Juggalo outfits and their makeup and stuff. And we drive by it, and it's like that's one of those moments when you realize how like middle-aged you actually are. When I'm driving by with my husband, and we just look at them.
Kids.
And go, oh no! It was almost like affectionate. Like look at the juggalos.
Look at the adorable.
Isn't that adorable?
Yeah, you know. And I just
isn't that cute?
And it's like, you know. And I this is one of those things too where it's like the. It's not even a guilty pleasure thing because it's not like I'm a big Insane Clown Posse fan or something, but it's that thing where I catch people in my generation turning into their parents, and I always try to very politely correct them. Where people are like, Insane Clown Posse's retarded. Like, we'll say the guy with, like, a KISS t-shirt. And I'd say, like, if you have ever in your life dressed as a member of KISS, like, if you have ever dressed as a musician, if you have ever in your life painted your face in any way, if you painted your face to look like Ziggy Stardust, you are never again allowed to criticize the Insane Clown Posse, because then you have just become like your own grandfather.
You lose perspective. I maybe it's just that we lose perspective in general nowadays, because, you know, we look at everything in a micro sense. But like on the Lady Gaga story the other day, somebody put a comment on Oregon Live that said, another example of the dumbing down of America. It's like, well, no, this comment is because she's a pop star. There have always been pop stars. There always will be pop stars doing something different. There's nothing dumb about her. It's complicated to get into the clothes that she gets into. She writes catchy pop songs that are pretty good. She's got a decent voice.
You know, but it's that whole thing about, you know, like we're living in an era of the most vacuous music on earth. No. And it's like that is like you have become old if you ever said that, like that. And I'm not saying that I'm like down with all the kids or whatever, but at the same time, I don't just blindly like, I did not grow up with it, therefore it sucks.
My feeling, juggalos are probably a lot like pit bulls. Most of them are well behaved, but you know, bad ones that ruin the entire
Ixnay on the it bull.
No, I agree with him. He's being correct. Most pit bulls are delightful, but yes, the occasional bad apple pit bull, it gives the rest of them a bad name.
Juggalos are not good pets, is what I'm saying.
There's someone in this room who will occasionally have a lot of anger about the pit bull issue. I don't want to say who it is, but it's Dawn. So just be careful. I'm just saying.
I was afraid that was going to go in a wrong.
I was going to afraid you that the wrong thing was going to come out of your mouth, and then it was going to be blood on the carpet. All right, let me read these Juggalo comments. I find myself saying the weirdest things on the show. And then we'll blah, blah, blah. All right, just random comments just from the CNN message board. So these are people who have somehow gotten onto the Intertron and managed to post. There's just no particular order. They should have booked Betty White instead. Followed by, this is a pathetic article. First off, what the hell is Tila Tequila doing at an ICP event? That actually does bear
Her management needs to bear some responsibility.
Because I don't know why you would ever have booked her there in the first place. That actually doesn't make any sense.
Well, Tom Green, Gallagher. They had Colt Cabana, who apparently was coming out to play the role of a cop kind of a sketch.
But here's the thing. That all does make sense. Because, you know, there is like they have a whole wrestling offshoot of the Insane Clown Posse. Like, their empire, I'm not effing around when I say that it's a massive,
but Gallagher.
Like,
explain
thing.
Gallagher.
I will
explain a 60-year-old man smashing watermelons at a juggalo.
Do you
thing.
Want to take this, or should I? I can tell you why
he makes a mess. They make messes.
That's their whole thing. Is they have a whole thing about spraying the audience with food and beverages and whatever. You know, and their
he
whole thing is spraying them with
Faygo
soda.
Bottles.
Yeah, I mean it is part and parcel of what they do. It makes sense.
He's not that good.
Tom Green is untalented and loud and obnoxious, and they are as well.
Yeah, he's like fart humor that makes, you know, he's you know, it makes money and makes adolescent boys chuckle.
Well, there
chuckle.
You go, Tila Tequila. Untalented, obnoxious.
They
and,
must have just figured it was like the boobs factor, maybe. Or that, you know, I would not actually, because they are savvy enough business people, I would actually not put it past them to have realized that this or something like this would have happened, and they couldn't get Jessica Simpson.
Maybe Emmylou Harris was booked.
Let's see. If you're being pelted with feces, why would you continue to expose yourself? Okay, that's a fair question, too. Why would you expose more of your skin to the fecal matter? How about this? Tila Tequila is the Sarah Palin of the CNN entertainment section. She just has to show up somewhere, and she's instantly on the front page of the CNN website. Who does her agent know at CNN? Followed by, this is what she gets for murdering her girlfriend. Oh, that's awesome. The best one.
My favorite comment yesterday, and I can't remember which of the many, many, many websites I was reading about this on yesterday while I was hanging out in my basement, but was just, projectiles, how do they work?
You know, the thing about her murdering her girlfriend is, you know, that's a whole thing about her and Casey Johnson. They were together, and that actually was responsible for the single best celebrity tweet that has ever existed, which is Tila Tequila. She said of the tweet after Casey Johnson died, where she said, I'm quoting now. This is after Casey Johnson died, Tila Tequila said, "Everything we ever did was spend time together. That's why her location, she always put my fiance's bed. It pains me," Tila wrote on Twitter after Johnson died. "We used to send tweet messages to each other while laying next to each other in bed. But now I tweet alone." End quote.
So there you go.
"I tweet alone" is the best phrase that's ever been put on the internet. Final comments here. Let's see. "This is why the Taliban hates us." And this one's just for Dawn. I don't know who this, I don't know what extraction this, the commenter is. It says, "Did she died? The clowns make the girl go boom boom." I am quoting now from CNN.com. "Did she died? The clowns make the girl go boom boom," and she gets all caps "cut," and then all caps again, and "cut" with like five U's, all caps again, "no, to the Tila, I am so cry," winky emoticon. "Someone call police 0911. Tila, Tila, you so strong. You so brave. Clowns so wrong. Tila, Tila, sing my song all day."
Oh, is there a name there for go. The person
Was
who
Was that
wrote
Shaggy
that?
And or Too Dope?
It is from Rubinkus, something there. All right, so there you go. So, Tila, you're so strong. Clowns, so wrong.
The Juggalo Altamont.
Jesus, God. All right, I'll tell you what. Dawn, step down for a moment. We'll take a little break. Come back with your top five. Now that we've kept you for like 9 hours. we're here with Ryan White from the Oregonian. Read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. We will come back after this. The Rick Emerson Show continues next right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A man who returned home Sunday to find a car prowler on his property was shot after he tried to chase him down, deputies said. Ivan Yelensky noticed the door on one of his cars was open when he returned to his home near Northeast 21st Avenue at 5:50 a.m. This was in Vancouver, Washington, by the way. Yelensky was walking to his front door when the man ran past him. Yelensky turned and made his way back to his car when the burglar began shooting at him, according to the sheriff's office. The gunman fired four shots, and deputies said one of the bullets went through a car door and struck Yelensky in the upper thigh as he tried to chase him. The bullet did not injure Yelensky. How does a bullet strike you in the upper thigh and not injure you?
Well, I don't know. It could have been perhaps it was some sort of, he was carrying a foreign object.
It went through the car door first?
Yeah, maybe it was slowed enough that it just sort
bink.
Of, I mean, I guess,
the juice off.
Yeah, they got to stop at some point, I suppose. The forward momentum has to cease eventually.
The gunman is described as white and 30 years old with dark hair and a dark mustache. He wore black clothing at the time. He was last seen leaving the area in an older white suburban-style SUV with a black cargo box mounted on top of the vehicle. Deputy said the man is likely armed with a small caliber revolver.
Well, okay.
A Forest Grove man was jailed on charges of assault, reckless driving, and driving while suspended Saturday after he crashed into a bicyclist. Officers were called to 22nd Avenue and Main Street in Forest Grove around 4:40 p.m. Matthew Glenn told police he was riding his bike when a driver ran over him. Paramedics took Glenn to a Portland area hospital to be treated. Police said witnesses knew the identity of the driver involved, and they gave officers license plate information. Officers arrested Chong Wu, who police said admitted to being the driver of the car.
This is now the second, I think, in two, well, not 2 days, but I guess it was one on, was it Friday or Thursday that guy got hit downtown?
Yeah.
It was like on the, because this has been a, this is one of those things where I know that it is a, what is the word I'm looking for? It is a, one of those things that it happens at about the same rate every year, but sometimes you just fixate on it and sometimes you don't. I forget there's an actual term for that. But it's sort of like how a couple years ago it was like everybody, you know, was all fixated on great white shark attacks or something. Mm. And there was like the same number as always. But then 2 years ago it was all the bicycles. That was the whole thing where it was like everybody, including myself, by the way, was hoping, you know, and rooting for just a full-scale riot to erupt at some point. Because there was that thing where it was like a bicyclist who worked for the Department of Transportation who was hit by a car driven by a guy who whatever, and then he picked up his bicycle and started beating the guy in the car with it or whatever. It was just a whole thing. And it was like the entire city seemed to be holding its breath and waiting for just some gigantic conflagration to happen. And I was just – and then I was just – and it was thwarted at the last moment somehow, and I was eternally sad. But this, it sounds like it's now we're ticking up, you know, in face-offs between cars and bicycles this year. So there is still hope.
The weather's been hot, which makes people cranky.
That's what
and
I'm saying.
And it's sunny, so there's more people out riding their bikes. And not to, you know, paint with too broad of a brush, but a lot of bicyclists in this town are dicks.
Yeah, no, the stop sign is not, it's not a suggestion, friend. You know, stop, don't stop. If you don't stop, whatever happens next is your problem. And I say that as a guy, I haven't bicycled a lot this year, but I am occasionally a cyclist. My wife cycles much more frequently than I do. But it's just, you know, but just, it's just like, you know, because she's like camping this weekend right now as I speak. And as I've told you this, that when my wife goes camping or hiking or goes to whatever the hell, goes to visit a holy man at the top of a bamboo hut in Tibet or whatever, I always just say, like, you know, if you get off the beaten path and if you go where the Forest Service tells you not, you know, where they tell you not to go, I will not be sending anyone to save you, and I will not be spending any of my tax dollars or anyone's help. You know, you take your life in your hands. And I've told him, like, if you bicycle without a helmet and you get injured, I'm not going to mop up your drool. That is your own problem. So you're hoist by your own baton. There's certain things you can't prevent. That ain't one of them. All right. If we got a watch, and then we'll do the top five.
I do have a corpse watch.
Okay,
so let's
get this done. And we will put off till tomorrow the playing of the Mosque at Ground Zero song. I know you had mentioned that earlier, and I've gotten requests for it, but there's just no time. After a while, even I get sick of hearing myself talk. That's not really true, but I have to say it's true. Otherwise, I look like an egomaniac. Here's your corpse watch for whatever the hell this is. This is what, Monday? Is that
Monday.
Still Monday?
It's still Monday.
Improbably enough, here's your corpse watch right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Don Taylor with your corpse watch for Monday.
Cheryl Carol Lagerway is an Australian Aboriginal elder and psychic who was trying to help find a little girl who went missing in Sydney, Australia almost 2 weeks ago. She had a disturbing vision of that of a little girl's body in a park. When authorities got there, they did find a body, but it wasn't the girl they were looking for. The psychic had found the wrong corpse. Instead of finding a body of a missing child, the psychic found the headless torso of an adult woman near a park creek. The body was found at a sacred Aboriginal site, Nurraginji Reserve at Duneside in western Sydney. Cheryl Carol Lagerway was searching for Keisha Abrahams, a six-year-old girl who went missing from her home in Sydney, Australia about 2 weeks ago. She said she had a gruesome dream of the little girl being murdered and her body being in the park. Carol Lagerway said she's not psychic, but has a third sense and a dream that led her to believe that she could help find Keisha Abrahams.
Where was this? What in what country?
Australia.
See?
She's an Australia Aboriginal elder. And she had a dream, and she shared it with the police.
This is one of those things where I think my part of my brain has been permanently warped, because no matter what country we're talking about, no matter the gender, no matter the culture, doesn't matter what we're talking, every story featuring a character like this, the voice in my head is always that Miss Cleo woman from television. You know? Can you find us the body? Oh, child, I find the body for you. Miss Cleo tell you exactly where the body be. Every story, it doesn't matter. Every psychic, it could be a 70-year-old man in Pakistan. And in my head, it'll be Miss Cleo's voice. Where is Miss Cleo right now, do you suppose? I want somebody to do
it. She's in prison.
Really? Is that true?
She was...
oh, child, Miss Cleo no like prison.
Feds and other people cracked down hard on her a couple of years ago.
Was it for like, was it like tax evasion or something, wasn't it?
All kinds of stuff.
Something, you know, the guy who did the Winnebago Man, you got to go track down Miss Cleo. That's the next thing I want him to do, is just go, I should hire a private eye just to find Miss Cleo, just to see what she's up to these days.
She's on Wikipedia.
Hey, you know what we ought to do? We ought to hire a private eye and just have him track down has-been actors for us, you know, or musicians or something. You know, just go find like... You know, he's like, one of the guys from New Shoes, but not anybody who sang. You know, just some guy who stood in the background. One of the Robert Palmer girls. I want to know where the Robert Palmer girls, like, not from Simply Irresistible, but Addicted to Love. Where are the Robert Palmer girls, like, right now, and what do they look like in real life? Somebody at VH1, I guarantee you, is stealing that idea out of my head. And they're going to have that Hal Sparks dick on, you know, saying quirky things in a little balloon right next to the Robert Palmer video, like, by the time I get home today. That's how VH1 works. They rifle through my head.
By the way, Miss Cleo is not in prison, although, you know, she did go through some lawsuits and some things like that. But in October 2006, in an issue of The Advocate, she did come out as a lesbian.
Oh, child. All right. That's all my Miss Cleo.
The torso that was discovered by the psychic Aboriginal woman in the park was dismembered and wrapped in plastic. Authorities think it might be that of Christy McDougall, a 31-year-old, although official identification hasn't been made. Christy McDougall is a young mother who's been missing since June. Detective Chief Inspector Pamela Young said they're interested that the psychic found a body, even if it was the wrong corpse. They're enlisting her help and continuing to search for Keisha.
All right, there you go. I wonder if that's one of those places where, like, she just figured it was a bad enough part of town or something that, like, you're bound to find a body of some kind. You know? It is sort of like, you just dig long enough. Don't you just figure that, you know?
Or maybe she had a real dream that led her there.
Or she's the prime suspect.
I was going to say that, or Michelle Dugan or whatever her name is, crossed her at some point. All right, there's your corpse watch, or... Monday, the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones. Zooming things that's better left alone.
Where's Randy Travis right now? I thought I would probably be Branson.
Yeah.
He seems like a Branson guy.
Maybe the Catskills in the summer.
He's one of those guys. I'm not a huge Randy Travis fan. He's one of those guys that I kind of feel bad for. You ought to have a little bit of a... Because he, you know, he was sort of the biggest thing. And then, he was at the forefront of that, the last pre-Garth era of country that just got swept away. Like in a big, sort of tidal wave of like Big Hair and, Big Hair and Kiss covers, you know, that came in with
he's
Garth.
He's got a little too much twang for
him
now.
Yeah, he has what Jimmy Bowen would call a little too much honk. In his voice. By the way, it occurs to me we should probably, as we mentioned this in Legion of News, we should probably mention it here, the Rick Emerson grant, which is a thing. It really is, it's the kindest service that has been done to mankind since that time earlier when I gave out the number for the cleaning solution, so you can call Michael Beatty and get your house cleaned. This really is a kindness being done to all the assembled peoples of Earth in ways that, they're really beyond enumeration. But our good friend is the proprietor of a business called New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. Basically, basically, they do the stuff that you know, that nobody else wants to do. They, you know, do you know, for your neighborhood, for your home, you know, stuff, you know, for cleaning and landscaping, because that's not just edging. That's not just doing like a little light work around the shrubbery. Sometimes there's just there's jobs that are just unpleasant, either because they're difficult or they're tedious or they're sweaty or they're just they're icky in some way. You know, the proprietor of New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance is going to be providing Rick Emerson grants. What are those, you ask? Don, what are those?
Those would be where you, the listener, can help a unfortunate soul who is not currently subscribed to the Rick Emerson Show get a free month of this whimsy and wonderfulness so that they can enjoy it themselves free of charge. It's a grant. It's a scholarship. It's a prize. It's a stipend, if you will.
It's like a thing. It's that. So yeah, some poor soul, some sad bastard in your life who is not able to listen to the glory that is the Rick Emerson radio program.
But of course, we are going to make you jump through some hoops.
This isn't Obamacare, Don. It's not something for nothing. We're not redistributing this. But in any event, the hoops through which you must jump are these. There's really just the one. What you got to do is you got to present us with a YouTube video no more than 2 minutes in length of you making the case, because presumably you are a subscriber, so it's got to be on behalf of somebody else, but you making the case in a YouTube video no more than 2 minutes in length about why this acquaintance of yours ought to receive an Emerson grant from New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance, why they ought to be given a month's worth of glory and entertainment from this program. So don't send us the raw video. Don't send us like a file. It's like 100, you know, gigawatts size or whatever. Just like send us the link to the YouTube video. If you yourself are a subscriber, you're not eligible to win, but you know what? You can get there for a friend of yours. And then you'll have something to talk about. Then you'll have another bond of commonality between you. And that's really what life is. It's a series of covalent bonds bringing us together in a social way.
And not only that, you'll give us something to talk about. And that thing that we'll be talking about will be you.
That's right. See? So there you go. So and you'll look like a great guy, whether you are or not. Maybe you are already, but that's not important for
or
the
a
purposes
lady.
Of this. Or a lady. Or a person of indeterminate gender. So in any event, if you want to contact New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance, it is a shortening of several other words, New Mill Maint, and the only word there that's odd is maint, which is M-A-I-N-T, New Mill Maint at gmail.com, and we'll have details posted on that on the Rick Emerson website later on today. Here is your top five for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Indeed. All right, we're here with Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian, and we have asked him to assemble, and these are your top five songs to which you would brood. Is this of all time or now or then?
This is all time. I wasn't. Right. I feel like I did the high school brooding one previously. And
I think I part of the UFO. You might have done that.
And part of the decision was that I just wasn't smart enough in high school to brood well.
You just stared blankly at a wall.
I was much better at brooding in my 20s and, like, last week.
What did you do instead of brooding? Did you just sit there and just like drink hams or something?
In high school?
Yeah.
I didn't drink in high school.
I don't know. What did you do that took the place of brooding?
Watch TV.
All right. Well,
I
fair
really
enough.
Didn't brood.
I could brood or I could watch Elf. Well, it's Elf
I
again.
I wasn't cool enough to brood.
Yeah. No, I guess that's the difference between sulking and brooding. I think sulking is a thing that teenagers can do no matter who they are. Brooding, you're right, does take a certain depth of character.
It takes a certain... Something has to happen first, and then that has to go away, and then you brood. Nothing ever really happened in high school.
All right. Yeah. No, I'm with you on this. By the way, when it says track number 1, 2, so I'm going from the... that way?
You're going up. Honorable mention 5
so
down
six,
to 1.
So number 6,
six
is this.
6 was...
All
yes.
Right. Got it. All right, Don Taylor. Ryan White's top 5 all-time brooding songs.
Honorable mention, Richmond Fontaine, We Used to Think the Freeway Sounded Like a River.
Even the title's depressing.
Yeah. I love, and I was talking to Willie Vlauten about this record, which came out late last year. He was talking about he and a girlfriend were once living in an apartment by, I think it was like by 205 or whatever, and they would sit there and they would just pretend that, you know, it sounded like a river and that they were living in a better place. And then they came home one day and they'd been robbed, and he goes, you realize you're just really living in a crappy place because you can't afford to live any place better. And it's that kind of outlook that informs much of Willie's writing.
We've got to quit doing these lists at the end of the show. Lists such as... This should come before the Juggalo story. This is, you know, sad first, clown later.
was our pool. He'd laugh and set your toes in two.
He's one of those guys, he says the word laughing and it's the saddest thing you've ever heard.
Over the overpass, wearing the smiles of cars pass.
Oh, Jesus, God Almighty.
We'd listen to the crooners croon.
This is way better than anything on my list. Yeah, this is an emotional hole of the blackest variety.
I went through a period of and we'll get to some of the other ones on here. I was a pretty good brooder. Eventually, it took some time. It took some
you
work.
You worked at it. You put in the time. You really honed your craft. All right, these are Ryan White's all-time top five brooding songs. Don Taylor.
Number five, Tom Waits' Christmas Card from a Hooker in Minneapolis.
Another title for the win.
Yeah.
Oddly, I considered this one for my list. Either this or the Pogues' Fairy Tale in New York.
Ah, yes.
And it somehow ended
two,
up...
Two of the great Christmas songs
leaving
ever.
Leaving them off, yeah.
If it makes you feel better, I think the Pogues song was on Sarah's list. So that is acknowledged as a brooding anthem, I think.
Interestingly, last year when we were doing Christmas songs on the blog on Oregon Live, I was asking local musicians for their favorite Christmas songs, and Willie Vlauten offered the Pogues song. So there's your Richmond Fontaine.
Living on 9th Street, right above a dirty bookstore off Euclid Avenue. Stop taking dope. Quit drinking whiskey. My old man plays the trombone. Works out at the track.
Music like this always makes me feel like I ought to be much cooler than I really am. You know?
Says that he loves me.
Makes you want to wear a suit and a fedora and
yeah. It's not as big. Like I ought to be out of a Chandler
novel.
Have
a flask in your jacket.
Seriously.
Says that rest him up.
Be sitting in my office waiting for the big case that's gonna turn this whole dingy office around.
Give me a ring that was won by his mother. It takes me out dancing every Saturday night.
He's Ryan White. Wow. You just,
Charlie, like,
suddenly I'm in an airless room. just like an oxygen-free cubicle of despair. These are Ryan White's top five brooding songs of all time. Don Taylor?
Number four, Steve Earle, Lonelier Than This.
I get a friend of mine, and his whole goal is to turn me on to Steve Earle. He's to turn me around to him, on him, because Steve Earle sort of leaves me cold most of the time.
Yeah.
His whole
he
thing is
that.
To convert me.
My heart will break. Tonight I pray that I die before I wake. With every breath I'm tasting your kiss and the sweet upon my tongue.
So what era would this have been? Is this recent or is this older?
Oh, this was Transcendental Blues, which I think was 98 or 99. Actually, the next really cool sounding record that we can talk about that has not yet is Justin Townes Earl. His kids got a new one that comes out September 14th. He's going to be here for Music Fest Northwest. But it's just really just like drenched in like 50s style rock and a really cool record.
And there's nothing I can do. Dark out here and I can't find
love the drums in the back that are just like a march to death.
Right.
It doesn't get any lonelier than this.
You mentioned that you checked in on a couple episodes of the fifth season Wire. When you were watching, did you see Steve Earle?
Yes.
That actually is one of the things that started me. That I went back and started listening to him again because I was so impressed with him on The Wire that I wanted to give him another listen. And so a friend of mine gave me Guitar Town, which I'd never heard.
I love Guitar Town's a great record.
Yeah, and he's like, you got to start with this, and yeah. I'd never even heard it.
What's funny about him as an actor is he's in Tremé, except like you know, in a series filled with with musicians playing themselves, he's not playing Steve Earle. Right. And it always throws me for a loop when, you know, the other characters are talking to him. It's like, why don't you understand that he's Steve Earle?
You wonder, well, you wonder if Steve Earle does exist in their world, but if he's played by Steve Buscemi, you know.
Possibly.
All right, these are Ryan White's top five brooding songs of all time. Don Taylor?
Number three, Towns Van Zandt, Waiting Around to Die.
Here's the thing is, like, just the name Towns Van Zandt, yeah. And immediately you're like, oh, yeah, man.
And this version is from Heart, War, and Highways, and I love where he says that this is the first song that he ever wrote. And it just went downhill.
Sometimes I don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I can't even see the reason why. I guess I'll keep a gambling. Lots of booze and lots of rambling. It's easier than just waiting around to die.
Okay, seriously, when this list is over, I'm playing something upbeat. Just to wrap it all up at the end.
Again, you asked for it.
Oh, no, it's my own, no one but me to blame for this.
You know, if Earl was, you know, Earl learned from Towns, and you can even tell, like, you know, is low as Steve can get, Towns can, he's the teacher.
Well, and he, you know, to use the tire cliche, you know, he also, he really, you know, lived it. And I don't mean that in some sort of, you know, like you have to do that to have authenticity kind of
right.
way. You know, it's like you don't have to shoot a guy to be a blues man. But at the same time, you know, there's no... I don't know, there's just that weird strain of something you can hear in a guy.
Yep.
It's that sort of that strain of something right down the center, a thread that has just kind of gone rotten early on in the guy's life, you know?
And it's an odd thing, too, when you start writing about, like, there was a pretty good biography of Towns that came out, it was 2 or 3 years ago now, and you got to walk that fine line between, you know, writing about what he did and not romanticizing it because,
right.
you know, living the way that he lived and drinking the way that he drank and, like, losing a bet to, you know, losing his a gold tooth in a bet and going out back with a bottle of booze and some pliers to pay up is not...
Not a role model, kids. No.
Hell of a guitar player when he was sober, though.
Prison, I got me a friend at last. He don't drink or steal or cheat or lie.
Somebody told me, I don't know if this is true or not, that at one point in his, I mean, you know, I think years before he died, for no readily apparent reason, he just, like, signed all of his songs over to his wife. Or his ex-wife, I guess she would admit at that point. She just said, I don't know the context of it, but that for no reason that was obvious to anyone, he signed over the rights to his songs and effectively denied himself any kind of a revenue stream for the remainder of his life.
Yeah, I forget why that he did that. That's in that biography, but I believe he did do
God
that.
God damn. All right. These are Ryan White's, this is like the baton death march. Ryan White's top five brooding songs of all time, Don Taylor.
Number two, Warren Zevon, Indifference of Heaven.
That's what we were just talking about.
Off the aforementioned Mutineer record.
Great song, though.
Yep.
Great song.
Time marches on, time stands still, time on my hands, time to kill, blood on my hands, and my hands in the till, down at the 7-Eleven, gentle rain falls on me. All life folds back into the sea. We contemplate eternity beneath the vast indifference of heaven.
A great big empty feeling brought to you by Warren Zevon.
Well, and it's
the why are we even bothering feeling.
Well, he has that whole, you know, the sort of, and he did a lot of writing that was very wry and sort of darkly witty.
Right.
And then occasionally, though, he would just, Zevon at his best captured this sort of the void sometimes that you feel is either out there. And my wife made this observation when she was reading The Road, the Cormac McCarthy thing, that at one point there's this phrase where he talks about, he was trying to keep a positive mental outlook, you know, the main character. And it went, I'm all butchered, of course, but he talks about having this realization one night where he says he realized that there was really no point in keeping a positive outlook because it's not like things were ever going to turn around. It's not like he was going to wake up one day and, you know, the earth was fixed and everything was fine and that he only had borrowed time and borrowed earth and borrowed eyes with which to sorrow it. And she said that she actually had to, like, put the book down for, like, an hour because it was the worst thing she'd ever read. And Zevon has that thing, too, of the whole, like, you are on a rock floating through space alone.
There's a line coming up on this one where, you know, he gets to just that, really, where he name-checks Springsteen and Patti Scalfa, and I think it's coming up right after this. And Billy Joel and Christie Brinkley, who, you know, maybe they would agree at this point.
They say everything's all right. They say better days are near. They tell us these are the good times, but they don't live around here. Billy and Christy don't, and Bruce and Patty don't. They don't live around here.
Wow. Well, all right, then.
Yeah.
Ryan White's...
I had a girl.
I feel like I should apologize to everybody.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it'll be okay. Go home, sit in the closet, rock back and forth.
Next week we'll bring in, like, top five party pop songs.
You know what I did? Like, last Thursday, I think it was, I did the top five most absurdly happy songs found on my MP3 player. So, there you go.
We'll do that one next week.
And they all sounded like ABBA, by the way. Ryan White's top five brooding songs of all time. Mercifully, we are now at number one. What is that, Don Taylor?
That would be Bruce Springsteen, The Promise.
The sequel to Thunder Road. Things didn't turn out well for our characters.
Is it actually a direct sequel?
It is actually written pre-Darkness of the Edge of Town, after he'd kind of become a rock star, and but still nothing seemed all that right.
Johnny works in a factory.
Now things are off to a good start.
Billy works downtown. Terry works in a rock and roll band, looking for that $1 million sound. I got a job down in Darlington, but some nights I don't go. Some nights I go to the drive-in, and some nights I stay home. Followed that dream just like those guys do way up on the screen. I drove my Challenger down Route 9 through the dead ends and all the bed scenes.
So I'm going to ask you this. You've talked a lot about Springsteen. We're with Ryan White from The Oregonian. You can read him in print in The Oregonian, online at oregonlive.com/music. Music editor extraordinaire and so forth. But you've talked a lot about Springsteen and about seeing him and listening to him and experiencing him. What was your first introduction to Springsteen? How did you...
Oh, I mean, I remember Born in the USA was like right in that wheelhouse where I was, you know, I would have been 10. And, you know, my friends in the apartment building that we lived in, who lived up on the top floor, they had cable and they had MTV. So I remember, you know, all of those videos would have been my first experience. I didn't start getting into them until like the late 90s I bought Ghost of Tom Joad first, just right. Randomly at a...
Sort of worked your way backward.
And worked my way backwards and forward and through and in.
That's, you know, in a way, that's a strong album to start with, you know, because it's just got, not unlike this, it has that Steinbeckian sort of, you know, everything is just covered in dust and failure feel to it.
I think it was after I got that, and I was telling a friend, like, God, the record's great. And he goes, oh, you got to check out Nebraska. It's like that, but better. And
how can anything be like that, but better? Well, you've said, Don, have you said that Nebraska is your favorite Springsteen record?
Yeah,
that you're just a huge fan of Nebraska.
I was listening to that on vinyl the other day, and it's just...
I've been a fan of Springsteen for a long time. I lived in L.A. for the first half of my life, and I saw Springsteen in concert, I think, three different times, and loved, you know, his big bombastic live shows and the interaction with the band and all this stuff. But it's the It's the quiet stuff that, that really, really works for me.
And that song's interesting. I mean, it never saw the light of day until 99 when they put out the box set. It's a Darkness outtake, and they're going to be in October. There's going to be next month at the Toronto Film Festival, they're debuting a documentary on the making of Darkness on the Edge of Town that'll eventually be, I assume it'll come out before Christmas, part of a box set like they did with Born to Run. And that's the title of the documentary is The Promise. And it's, you know, it's that idea of, you know, the sequel to Thunder Road and just nothing has gone right for that character. And Mary, who he was imploring to take that ride with him, she isn't in that song. So, you know, I still have never quite worked out whether or not she just left him standing there and went back inside and closed the screen door on him, or if she went and then left.
Well, you know, and Springsteen's got that thing where it's where the highs and the lows are both so believable because each has the opposite in existence. You know, some guy that just makes peppy, upbeat music all the time might be enjoyable, but it doesn't really ring true.
Yeah.
Because nothing that exuberant exists without having the sort of polar twin. So when Springsteen does that, you know, you sort of really, you believe it. All right, I'll just play this as we wrap everything up here. So we actually had a request for this earlier. You've heard this, undoubtedly. Have you heard We've Got to Stop the Mosque at Ground Zero?
I have not.
Oh, dude, I got to start it from the beginning then. As we end this.
I just love the intro. Though.
Oh, no, it's awesome. Yeah. It is like, and it's a it's like the best Trey Parker song that's not by him and that is completely sincere.
Is this in the mode of all those songs Ray Stevens is writing right now?
This guy's apparently done several instant sort of tragedy songs. You were like 9/11 happens and he sees it on TV and he's like, get me a steno pad. And then he just, you know, and then he goes into his back, you know, and he cranks out like a whole montage type, you know, like a sort of like a Charlie Daniels meets Survivor kind of a song. this is his latest and he wrote it like a day after the whole mosque in New York thing happened. We had it last week actually. Before we play this, and then I'll let you revel in the glory of it, the Oregonian, you're going to be writing about the new Mellencamp record that's in the blog tomorrow.
Yep, Portland Folk Festival. We'll have Lady Gaga in review at some point this week. And that show is Thursday night.
Fantastic. Ryan Wyatt, read him in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com, and so forth. In fact, what I'll do is I will just we'll kind of get all of our business out of the way right here, and then I will let you revel in the glory of this song. And so you can just you can really appreciate the magic, you know, the magic of the man. Join us tomorrow when I guess we'll include Joseph Rose, who is a traffic reporter for the Oregonian. He's going to be here to. It really is just going to be me talking a lot about on, you know, MLK, how they have this thing in their head where around 3:49 every day they decide that they are going to stop traffic on the one remaining lane for reasons that sort of pass any kind of understanding, and then it'll just spiral out of control from there and. Blah, blah, blah. And then we'll go home and I'll have some Triscuits. So the Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler. Chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. Don't forget, when everything is said and done today, we'll have a brief musical interlude and then Legion of News will encore, followed by the encore of this very fine radio program. The station runs 24/7 right here at rickemerson.com. All right, now that that is done. So this is just called We've Got to Stop the Mosque at Ground Zero. And it's awesome. And as awesome as that opening might have been, you have no idea. So we'll just give a little...
We've got freedom of religion, I understand. But Ground Zero is one location where a mosque shouldn't stand.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands of Americans died in the assassination.
It just turned into the Bosom Buddies theme song.
I designate Burlington the war memorial.
Can't let them build it. No, 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 no. There's a painful memory in our minds.
So painful, I got the Real Men of Genius guy to sing on it.
When we envision that tragic time,
and you can just see him going like, yeah, this is the one they'll remember me for. This will be my masterwork.
Oh, yeah. Americans died in the attack. It's a sacred place, and that's a cold hard fact.
It's cold filtered.
You want that refreshing taste of the Rockies. Check your can. It's blue.
God help us retain the honor.
The music is so wrong.
And, I mean...
For all the families that have suffered so
I'm so glad this guy exists. You know what it is? It's like if there is a God, he has put this man here as a bit of decoration for the rest of us. A little something to look at during the trip.
Changing my mind on the issue.
I've come around. I really have.
3,000 people died a block and a half away. Are you serious? Americans were
killed if we let them build it. The touching breakdown section. They'll turn 9/11 to a mockery. We gotta stop. There you go. Ground zero.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Making fools of us.
It's a slap in the face, and there's no doubt about it. Doesn't everyone feel better now? I think he'd like to know we put a smile on our face. I swear to God, that goes on for like 30 seconds. So, there you go. See? If that doesn't put a big grin on your face to round out the day, then you are dead inside, my friends. All right, there we go. All right, thank y'all for joining us. I already said all the other stuff, so join us tomorrow for Legion of News live at noon at pdx.fm and the Rick Emerson Show a little bit after 1 o'clock every weekday, including tomorrow at rickemerson.com. So see y'all then. It is Monday, August 16th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thanks for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.